8:45 on the clock. We'll call to order the Gage County Board of Supervisors regular meeting. Open meetings. Oh, let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Open Meeting Act is posted on the southeast corner of the wall. Attendance by observation, Setzer, Byers, Lytle, Hill, Bauman, Dorn, and Juergens. First thing on the agenda is a consent agenda. The agenda consists of the general agenda, approval of minutes from the previous meeting held March 20th, 2013, approval of all claims through April 3rd, 2013 in the amount of $290,684.98, approval and place on file correspondence received, approve specifications and call for bids on a new 2013 motor grader for the Highway Department. Approve appointing Steve Norton, address 1320 Doyle Lane, Beatrice, Nebraska, to fill the remaining term of John Mensel for, through July 2014 on the Veterans Service Committee. Approve informal bid from Superior Fence for the fencing project along the north side of the jail slash sheriff's department in the amount of $7,280.
I want to pull that off the consent calendar.
All right, we'll pull that off to be considered separately. Approve an informal bid from Muhlenberg Construction for the counter project in the treasurer's office in the amount of $1,450. And I have multiple permits here, and unless anybody objects, I'll reference the permit number and who it's for. And the township location, it's on the consent agenda, and it'll be a matter of public record, but just because there's so many, unless everyone's got a real lot of heartache over that. Seeing none, I'll move forward. Approve the utility permit 940 for the Lower Big Blue NRD, and this is the water line project in the village of Holmesville in Rockford Township. Approve permit number 941 for the Lower Big Blue NRD, again the water project. It's in the right of way of 021-024, and that's in Rockford Township into Sherman Township. Several different locations there. Approve utility permit 942 for Glenn Katz to install an electric line in Holt Township. Approve utility permit 943 for the Lower Big Blue, again the waterline project, right away 025 in Sherman Township. Approve utility permit 944 for Roars Machinery and Danny Lundberg, installing an electric and water line in Barnston Township. Approve utility permit 945 for the Lower Big Blue NRD, again the water project, right away 026-028, Blue Springs Wymore Township. Approve utility permit 946 for the Roars Machinery, Lynn Gerber, to install an electric line in Midland Township. Approve utility permit 947 for Norse Public Power to install an electric line in Philly Township. And approve declaration of the 2004 Ford Explorer VIN number 1FMZU73K14ZA90287 as surplus and call for bids. And bids are to be opened at our next meeting, April 17th at 9:30 a.m. Need a motion to approve or disapprove 1 through 17, and we'll pull off at Denny's request number 7, which is the Superior Fence bid, and we will consider that separately. So this is 1 through 17 minus number 7. Need a motion to approve or disapprove.
So moved. To approve.
Mr. Byers to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Hill. Any more discussion? Wait, was there one thing? I think I see it. Did I see something? I thought I made a note. I guess not. Okay, vote 7-0 to approve. Now, Mr. Byers, we will consider number 7.
Right. We have Dave Jones. We had received 3 informal quotes. On that fence, And we did have the lowest bid, the $7,280, but Dave, you want to explain? We've had something else happen. So.
Right, yes. After looking over the bids, the sheriff had talked about using either a rolling fence or a cantilever, or this would be for the gates, rolling or cantilever type gates, and we missed a deduction on that. So actually the low bid now would be American Fence for $6,494.
Okay, almost $1,000 less from the low bid that we had before, and I would move that we approve that.
A motion to approve a bid in the amount of, what was that again, for American Fencing Company?
Yes, sir.
$6,494 to do the fencing project along the north side of jail and sheriff's department. A motion to approve.
Second.
Seconded by Kathy. Any further discussion? Seeing none, vote. 7-0 to approve. First thing on our regular agenda is comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. We have several things on the agenda. If you're here to speak specifically regarding an agenda item, there will be time later. We'll allow the public to interject and provide their perspective. But if there's any comments on anything that's not here that you'd like us to be aware of, now's the time. Okay. Seeing none, we'll move forward. Go to committee reports, building and grounds.
Okay, we had an extensive meeting, and Dave, if you'll come forward and we can go over a few of these things. As we had on our consent agenda, the treasurer's office and getting that project done, and we have approved that, and also the fencing bids behind the jail. We did have some conversation as far as the sheriff's entrance and disability requirements, and we're going to be getting estimates relative to that to determine and look at it to determine whether it is something that we do need to do, whether we're fitting the requirements right now, or whether it's something that can wait, that doesn't have to be done right away. Did you have any comments on that, Dave?
Were you referring to the one at the sheriff's office?
Right.
Yes. We would like to take another look at that and make the handicap entrance come in the main lobby area. Originally, it was designed where they would cut out a window and the handicap entrance would come in through the sheriff's office. And if we kind of step back, take a look at more of a long-term plan, it would be better for it to come into the main lobby area.
Okay, and the Register of Deeds office, they need to extend the counter, and Dave is going to do that, and he said that won't be overloading him as far as his responsibilities are concerned, so he can handle that. We have a tree over in the corner, I think, that's dying, and Dave, you want to talk about that and the elevator both?
During the construction period, there is a lot of soil compaction in the yard, and unfortunately we have a very large pin oak tree in the southeast corner that last 2 years has been struggling, and I did have the extension office come out and take a look at it, and they said it is dying, so we are going to have it removed here shortly.
And it's not something we want to do, but it's just a requirement that we're going to have to do it. Okay, in the elevator, we have some issues, but they're under warranty, and so it'll be no cost
right,
to us.
There's some vibration in the elevator, so they are going to come down and put some isolation pads underneath the elevator and actually put a little bit of weight in there to take the shimmy out of the car of the elevator.
Okay, and we are at a point where our general maintenance budget is used up, and
correct.
So there's no more money in that line item, but... anything else that you have, Dave?
I would like to discuss during the committee report that we did have a WIM from Berger and Architects come down and give a report to the Building and Grounds Committee regarding the south entrance modifications. If we ever were going to do anything with a main point entrance coming into the courthouse, there were several options and a cost study done to make the south side more accessible, and after looking at the plans, the committee felt it was cost prohibitive at this time and recommends reopening the east second floor door to let customers come in up the stairs, and we would still close it during bad winter weather, but otherwise we would reopen that door. And as far as we do have the handicap entrance on the east side ground floor, that meets all the ADA requirements. The trouble we do have with that entrance is either the north wind or the south wind that blows. It just creates such a wind tunnel down there, and I will continue to see what we can do to improve the wind situation down there.
It was a feeling in the committee unanimously that we weren't prepared or really even feeling absolutely necessary that we do spend the money to redo the south side, that we can make, as we have for years and years, that east side available, and we have it. So other than at times when the wind is blowing, and I've heard our chairman will be down there to hold the door, so so we're just going to wait on that. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Just a question. I know we're hypersensitive about some of the entrances that come in and out of the building. Do we get much, Dave, have you had much feedback from the public that shows up here of some of the things that they like or don't like? Or,
I
seem
get
to be hypersensitive, but what's the feedback?
I'd say at least 75% of the people or so do come up the stairs. They always have. I know our stairs are old. But it does work well for an entrance coming into the building. And like I say, 75% of the people come up that way. When everybody's crowded to come through the entrance down on the lower level, it does cause some problems. And on certain days when driver's license has a large crowd, people, are walking down the hallway and we have a large congregation of people in the middle of the hall also. So I do hear some negative comments on why we don't have the second floor open.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else? Building and grounds, no. Equalization? Nothing for equalization?
No, nothing.
Soon we will, though. Soon. Be really busy. Finance and insurance?
I don't really have anything to report other than got some bonds estimates for our road project and stuff, and I'll report during the road project on those, I guess, so.
Human Resource, Employee Relations?
No report.
Where are we at, though, on the, and I guess I'll look at Dawn, too, Employee Handbook? How's that progressing? I know we're making updates. We have a projection of when we'll be approving that?
Hopefully soon.
Okay.
You it's said taken that a long time, yeah. I know. It's a long time
every
trying to get everybody
it's
to
coming.
Get it together.
Okay.
I know.
All right. Okay.
Kathy and I had that discussion earlier, okay. Too.
Okay. Law Enforcement, Emergency Management? Gary?
Law enforcement, we had a couple items that will come up later in the meeting that we'll discuss at that point. Emergency management, continue to work on the LEOP. Mr. Hawkins is doing a pretty good job of staying on top of it, and I think we're probably ahead of the schedule right now, so we're doing pretty good on that. I think it's paid off well to add him to Mark's staff down there. Other than that, there's not a whole lot going on.
Wood Bridge, Terry.
Few items, quite a few of these items will come up later in our discussion. Approximately 8 to 10 miles are left on the NRD project for rural water. I think they said the painters are there right now to do the water tower. So that's moving along well. Wymore Bridge, they're done with tree removal. And start date in about a month on that bridge with completion date of around October 15th. Signs, we've got kind of an informal quote on the signs we're needing. We're looking at about a $30,000 bill just for signs that we have to replace. Other than that, most of these items will probably come and discuss later on in the meeting.
I just want to talk about one thing we had with the rural water project. Came up was it 2 weeks ago? There, through the trenching, and we actually approved their permit. And I know we've worked with the highway department and the crews down there. There was a bringing the rural water line through Holmesville. In that agreement with the NRD, they were boring under or across roads. Well, I don't know if it was John that drove up on it, or there was a 24-inch trench about 3 city blocks long.
Right, right.
Right down the road to bury a water line. So We halted that project. They were gracious enough to fill the trench back in. We had them come to the road and bridge, and we discussed, why are you going down the middle of the road? There had been no permit request, and that was not supposed to be the plan at all. We were concerned about maintenance of the road ongoing, how that would affect the project. And so they came. We visited with the crews doing the work and the NRD folks. In order to access the Rural Water Project to the homes in Holmesville, that was the only route that they could take. So we requested they move as far off the road as possible. There was some utility issue running along the road as well. And so that's where we felt comfortable that we were very clear that moving forward, that if there was a need to come back and improve that with compaction, additional product, we would call them being the NRD, to come and fix that. Galen was right on top of it that day. I think we went out there, and it was kind of a, oh, my gosh. I graciously threw them out of Holmesville and said, get off the road. I think we've worked with them pretty well, and Galen's continued to stress that can't just be out there digging stuff up. I think everyone's been really, really positive. It's a good project, but there was a little bit of a misstep there. They have moved off to the road. It will go through the main county road through Holmesville, but it's off far enough that it shouldn't affect the integrity of the road. But if it does, we will be calling them. Is that a quick summation of multiple phone calls and in a pretty good meeting? I think that's kind of quick. So I think we're in good shape, and I think the committee felt comfortable based on the resolution that we had to that issue. All right. Next on the agenda is planning and zoning. We'll have Lisa Wiegand, I see there, to make a presentation and recommendation on the special use permit 2013-1, a commercial wind energy conversion system.
Good morning. I'm passing on the sheet. It's kind of a survey. So as the testimony comes in this morning, it might be a little bit easier for you to use those for reference. Again, for the record, I'm Lisa Wiegand, representing planning and zoning. When we wrote the regs, you adopted them back in 2010 in November. Prior to that, we spent a lot of time researching about the public safety and issues and concerns of everybody involved before we started writing those regs. The sheet that I'm sharing with you again is a summary of the setbacks and also the tax assessment information, which, as you hear testimony today, you may want to, you know, ask questions about. Paul Dockery, the project manager for Next Era Energy Resources, submitted their application to us at our February meeting. We received a full outline of that project along with the application itself. Throughout our research process for planning and zoning, we continued to consult with their team, and we had full cooperation from their company. In March, we held the special hearing for the special use permit for that project. Again, it's owned by Next Era Energy Resources, and that project is located in both Gage County and Jefferson County and consists of 44 total turbines. So in Gage County, 12 of those turbines are proposed with one alternative turbine, and that's in Glenwood Townships, township involving the section 6, 7, 17, 18, 19, and 30. Out of that, 48 landowners were notified at our hearing, and again, we sent those letters out, and those 48 landowners also received a letter again about today's hearing. The project is located in an AG1 district, and as our regulations state, all 12 turbines being proposed is treated as one aggregate project. So as you read our reds, it's one aggregate project. So we know that those turbines were going to be developed and coordinated in a fashion that they have to operate all together. Obviously, in the case of Steel Flats project, when it oversees through Gage County and Jefferson County, they start with our project first, and then they'll do the same thing over in Jefferson County for their procedures in the application process. The project itself compiles and complies with our zoning regulations that we have in place, which includes the setback requirements from the residents, the setbacks from public roads, the front yard areas, the turbines, the adjoining landowners, and also those participating and non-participating people in those properties. As you looked through the application, each of you had a book that was given to you, supplied by NextEra Energy, to study. And so as you view that application, you'll see that the turbines are sited for land use compatibility. The project avoids wetlands and the cultural sites, communication towers, which they had to provide for us in their application through the FAA. It also has the aviation impact studies, and it also avoids the pipeline in that area. The wind easements have all been secured from landowners, and we have reviewed those documents filed with DeGage County. Those landowners that are involved in the project, some of which testified at our hearing, noted that the lease agreements that they signed with NextEra addressed a lot of the issues of their concern. Some of their concerns were erosion and grading, the road upgrade, if it's in the field, the loss of their crop production through soil compaction in the construction phase, the process of construction itself. They were also addressed in their own lease agreements, the good faith of intentions by the company. And most importantly to everyone is probably the decommissioning of the site, if the site is no longer operational. So as you look at the map within that project area, all the residents that have turbines proposed on their property have signed a wind easement, or that also includes the transmission lines that might cross past their property. We did hear testimony from a landowner who was concerned about the setback on his property. In this case, this particular landowner owns a 3-acre piece of property, which currently he uses for recreational purposes, with the future plans to build a house. That proposed turbine next to his property is estimated at 1,900 feet from a small storage shed that he has on that property. So that is a greater setback than what our guidelines are set at 1/4 mile. We acknowledge his concerns, but simply had to use the current status of the land use when we made our recommendation. Throughout the process, we heard public concerns, and you will hear those probably in part today, about the possible interruption of cell phone coverage, noise nuisance, shadow flicker, the fire hazards, possible health issues coordinated with high voltage, the effects of changes in tax valuation, possible storm and fire damage, and how we control those and what's expected of the county through that. And probably the most sensitive thing in this whole hearing was the nature, the scenic assessment, and which may or may not be a nuisance depending upon those that you talk to. So all the questions and concerns that we asked that day and the public asked that day were addressed by NextEra Resources. And so I hope you will ask those same questions, too. Mark Engler with the Homestead National Monument did express concerns about the impact that the wind turbines will have on the scenic view of Nebraska's prairie and the effects that the turbines have on the nature's sounds, and taking into effect specifically those people that are driving to the Homestead National Monument. So one of the conditions that we placed on NextEra was to provide us with a view shed report, which we did receive within the next week from the company, and that has been added to your application. Looking out for the county's best interests, as a commissioner, our major concern was the roads through in the construction process. So we studied at length the road agreement that was under review at the time by the county attorney's office. And the agreement states that NextEra will be responsible for making sure that those roads are utilized during construction in an as good or better than condition. The agreement also states that a representative from NextEra, from the Gage County Highway Department, from the supervisors, and the township, Glenwood Township, would together survey the area in the pre-stage the actual construction stage, and also take a video inventory at the completion of it and make their comparisons. So based on our findings and in compliance with our zoning regulations, everything is in place, we do recommend approval of the Steel Flats project. So questions?
I have a question, Lisa.
Yes.
John had asked me, Mr. Hill had asked me earlier in this report here, there's a proposed decommissioning agreement and plan. Is there anything that would make us be, that we would be preemptive in approving the permit without a plan to decommission?
No, and they will address that in their comments on their but no, everything is fairly and well in place, so we are comfortable with that decommissioning plan that is stated. So the other thing that they will provide at the completion of this phase is once they get approval, the actual soil and erosion compaction study, but they have to have everything in place first, so we will receive that yet. We have a preliminary report, but we will get that. So.
Questions for Lisa?
I'd just like to say thank you, Lisa, and thank you for the zoning board. That was quite an interesting zoning meeting. Lasted probably a couple hours there in the middle of March.
Sure.
So thank you for your guys' time and your effort and what everybody's put into this.
Sure. As time goes on, if any of you have questions of the commission, I'll be here to answer questions or concerns that you may have. So.
All right.
Okay. Very good.
All right. Our public hearing is a timed event, so we've got about 4 minutes. Passing around is a clipboard. If you'd like to speak during the meeting for or against the project, there's just a list. So if you want to come address the board, we'll have a list so we can go through in an organized fashion. So we've got about 4 minutes here. But as that goes around, if you'd like to speak, please sign there, and then we'll take turns speaking. We'll go through here. Let's see, we can we'll move a little bit ahead here and squeeze this in. Approve or disapprove resolution designating Deborah Marshall Brown as her responsible charge for the Highway Department. I need a motion to approve or disapprove.
I make a motion to approve.
Moved by Juergens.
Second.
Seconded by Myron or Dorn. Galen, can you speak to this just briefly, please?
Yes, on all our federal aid projects where we get money from the federal government, it is a requirement that we have an RC on duty. They actually oversee the project. The CE that is hired by the county and approved by the county to do the work, he actually oversees the construction and the payroll and everything. The payroll actually goes through the RC to be approved, and the RC forwards it on to the NDOR. So when this was adopted two or three years ago, whatever it was, the federal people felt that the county wasn't involved enough at local projects, so that's why this RC program was developed. So, and Deborah went through and got all the training to do the RC for the federal projects on this.
Okay. Questions for Galen? We have a motion and a second. It's resolution 13-10. Seeing no further discussion, vote 7-0 to approve. Let's see. Well, we're just a couple minutes away, so we'll just sit here and look at each other.
The next one on there, that's
yeah.
Is it about the bridge conference, Galen?
Oh, okay, sure, yeah. Sure. Yes, sorry. Mm-hmm. Just as a point of process, we try to, when we send a significant amount of employees to conferences, we like to bring that up in a meeting if we can. Galen, Deborah, and you've got two bridge inspectors. I'll be going to a Pontus meeting and related to bridge inspection. Is that a two-day conference?
Yes, it is.
And that's 100% reimbursed. We're trying to see if we can get a direct build on the front end so it doesn't have to come out of the road budget, but that's all the costs are 100% recoverable, correct?
Yes.
And that's wages, too, and time spent, or is it just the conference?
Just the conference.
So the conference will go in there. Yes, Terry.
Those dates are April 16th and 17th. It's in Kearney. And like you said, it's for the Pontus program. And Deborah, Galen, Rod Aiden, and Bob Davis will be going. So,
thank you. Thanks, Myron.
Matt, you could do the next one, too, if you wanted to. That's just...
I'm not that quick.
Right? Oh. Well, we're just rescinding the motion for the... The entrance over at the sheriff's office.
That one too.
We've had that discussion.
Sure, yeah. You know, motion to approve or disapprove rescinding the board motion made on 3/20/2013 that called for bids on the handicap entrance project at the sheriff's department.
Move to approve.
Move to approve the rescinding by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Byers. Any further discussion?
And I believe Dave explained that why we are doing this, because at the last meeting we approved to have bids, and now we're rescinding that motion. Dave explained that. So.
Vote. 7-0 to approve the rescension of that motion. All right. Very good, Myron. 9:15. All right. 9:15, need a motion to open up a public hearing to hear support or opposition from the public on a special use permit 2013-1, a commercial wind energy conversion system, location section 7-8, sorry, strike that, section 6, 7, 18, 19, 20, and 30 in Glenwood Township. Need a motion to open up a public hearing?
So moved.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Setzer. Vote. 7-0, we are in a public hearing. 7-0 to approve. Where's the clipboard?
Still coming around.
Is it? Okay.
We could have Next Air do their presentation.
Yeah, Next Air, would you like to come do your portion? Yeah. We'll start with you all.
Thank you, members of the board, for having me here today. My name is Paul Dockery. I'm here on behalf of the applicant Steel Flats Wind Project and the 27 landowners that are participating in the project. Is kind of to reference yourself to the various resources we have around the room. We have the basic presentation and a few of the slides that you have a full deck in front of you, which is a more detailed presentation. Since we didn't have a projector, we did put up just a few of the slides for the public to be able to see. And also we have the survey map as submitted as part of our application, a larger format of that, and then overall site plan map, which includes the roads and collection and transmission line. The survey map is primarily the setbacks and other requirements of the application. You have that in the application documents in a smaller file, but they are available on the slides. As I mentioned, the Steel Flats Wind Project is the applicant for this special use permit. That company is owned by NextAir Energy Resources. We purchased that from Infinity Wind, who had been developing the project in the area for a few years. And we purchased that project and that company holding the assets from Infinity earlier this year. NextAir Energy is itself a wholly owned subsidiary of NextAir Energy Incorporated. To speak briefly about it, it is a U.S. company traded on the New York Stock Exchange. It's a Fortune 200 company with approximately 15,000 employees based out of Juno Beach, Florida. Two main companies I'd like to highlight. First is the company I work for, NextAir Energy Resources. It does business outside the state of Florida. We're an independent power producer, and we sell wholesale electricity to local retail providers in the 24 states and 4 provinces of Canada where we do business. A sister company to that is FPL. It's a retail provider of electricity in Florida. It has approximately 4.6 million customers, and they do everything from the generation, transmission, distribution, and retail sale of electricity, similar to a Norris Public Power District or an NPPD. It's a sister company to us. We don't sell power as NextAir Energy Resources from our wind farms in the other parts of the country to that sister company. They're independent, just have the same parent company, NextAir Energy Incorporated. NextAir Energy Incorporated is a celebrated company in its industry. We have been on Fortune's list of most admired companies 7 years in a row as the number one in our sector of electric and gas utilities. And that is a peer-decided award, meaning they survey other companies in the industry, other electric and gas companies, and from there, from the peers, they award this based on the feedback from the peers. NextEra Energy Resources is an important part of NextEra Incorporated's business. We operate in 24 states and 4 provinces of Canada, and we do more than just wind power. We are the U.S.'s largest owner and operator of wind turbines, but we also have gas plants, oil, nuclear, and solar projects. In total, we operate more than 17,000 megawatts of power plants. And it's really that diverse team of experts that are experts at nuclear, experts at the conventional fuel types and combined cycle gas plants and things like that that make us, I think, on the wind side so successful is we have a team of experts that work together. And, you know, a generator is a generator. So if a generator or one of our combined cycle plants has an issue, we go to our generator subject matter experts. Well, the wind turbines have generators, and those same subject matter experts that have been in the industry for a long time and know the specifics of generators and combined cycle plants and the nuclear projects, we utilize that same and leverage that same subject matter experts on these wind turbines, which has made us successful. We have over 700 wind operations employees at various projects across the country, located within those projects areas that are in charge of operating and maintaining the wind turbines. We operate over 9,500 wind turbines out of approximately 100 projects across the country. The Steel Flats Wind Project is our first project to be permitted in Nebraska, and it's scheduled to be our first project to be built and constructed in Nebraska. The project consists, as summarized by the Planning Commission staff presentation, 44 General Electric 1.7 megawatt wind turbines, 12 of which are planned for Gage County, and as noted, there is one alternate location which we are also permitting. Those alternate locations are designated in the event that during geotech samples where we sample the soil types or during construction, if there is an unforeseen obstacle, that we would have another location to be able to build at. The project connects to Nebraska Public Power District's Steel City substation, and the electricity will be sold to Nebraska Public Power District under long-term contract. The contract arose out of interest by NPPD to get more wind on its system and specifically to meet NPPD's goal of a 10% renewables on their system. And this project will contribute to that. Pending approvals from both counties, and Jefferson County did approve our special use permit last Tuesday. We plan on starting construction in July of this year, and we'll be finished with our installation and have all the turbines running by December of this year. In the spring of next year, we will have to come back and do some of the reclamation where we reseed and make sure that the roads and equipment comes back to the pre-construction status. And that'll be continue some construction activities in the spring of next year. The project is a $138 million investment in the two counties, and we estimate between the two counties over the first 30 years of the project, more than $11 million will be paid in property taxes. The way that property tax is broken down is wind nameplate capacity tax, which is equal to $3,518 per megawatt of installed capacity, and for the 12 turbines located in this county, we estimate that would be $71,000 paid annually, and that annual payment does not depreciate over time. As long as the equipment is installed in the county would receive the $71,000, a little over $71,000 as a payment as that nameplate capacity tax. Other taxes would be assessed on the real property associated with the foundations, the roads, and any other ancillary real property associated with the project. The turbine itself would not have that real property assessed to it because of the wind nameplate capacity tax. We'll have 5 full-time staff for the operations and maintenance of the project located within the project area. They'll have an office to work out of, and they'll be responsible for the day-to-day operations, troubleshooting, and maintenance of the wind farm. We estimate that during construction, approximately 150 construction workers will be employed in the project area. And we, throughout the life of the project, there'll be ongoing payments made to the 27 participating landowners in the project. And lastly, when I talk to other members of the electric industry within the state of Nebraska, it's often highlighted to me that one of the great attributes of wind power in Nebraska is that it doesn't take water to generate electricity. Most other conventional types of power plants, whether it be gas, coal, or nuclear, use water in some form, whether it be cooling or the production of steam to flow through a wind through a turbine. Wind turbines don't have to; they don't use that water for the production of electricity. That's often highlighted to me as one of the great benefits of this project, with water being a scarce resource in the state, and wind being an ample resource in the state. The wind turbines we're proposing are the latest in General Electric's workhorse model, the 1.7 megawatt model. The turbines have been used for over a decade, and the engineers at GE have continued to refine the product to make it more reliable and improve its performance. The overall height would be 426 feet to the tip of the blade, and each turbine would produce enough power to power over 400 homes. As Next Energy Resources designed the array, we considered many factors, including the Gage County zoning regulations. The proposed array complies with all of the Gage County setback requirements. We are not asking for any variances, and we have not. Including the setbacks from residences, public roads, front yard areas, turbines, adjoining landowners, and non-participating projects. The array also avoids wetlands, cultural sites, wildlife sites, communication towers, beam paths, aviation, and pipelines. The turbines are sited for land use compatibility. The array is designed to optimize wind turbine performance based on terrain and prevailing wind directions. Each location is visited to consider constructability. So we send a crew of surveyors and construction personnel to each turbine location to look for things that could impact the construction of that. Specific to this project, in this project area, there's a lot of terraces that farmers use in the fields that we work in. So we would microsite those turbines to stay away from the terraces to reduce the impact on that farmland. Geotechnical boring samples are taken at each location. Each location is reviewed by the participating landowner. The array is designed to minimize the adverse visual and sound impacts as required by the Gage County zoning regulations. And lastly, the turbine manufacturer, GE in this case, does a mechanical loads analysis to make sure that the specific climatic conditions and the specific turbine locations for this project and for this array, the loading because of those climatic conditions does not exceed their warrantied levels. And as part of our application, we submitted a portion, a redacted copy of that mechanical loads analysis. We provide, and the few charts here will walk through the array as designed and how the various impacts impact the location of the turbines. If Mary wants to flip to the next page. The first one here we're showing, we look at the FCC's communication tower database for beam paths, and you can see there's some solid lines. Those are between communication towers in the project area, and we site our turbines such that they're far enough away that even with the blade extended, it does not impact that, and we have a safety factor as well. Also included in that is the wetland areas and any streams in the project area. You can see those kind of identified by squiggly lines. Next one. We also include in our design the setbacks from roads and the setbacks from existing structures. On this map, you can see the pipelines that cross the county in that part of the county. And you can also see the road setbacks and then existing structures. For instance, we set back from barns, we set back from pivot irrigation, and we avoid those type of existing structures. We include setbacks from homes and non-participating landowners, and you can see once we get to that level of setback, there's little room in there to continue to refine the array. And if you go to the next one, we then, using that area that's available, refine the array for all those other items that I mentioned. When we take these considerations into account and comply with the setbacks of Gage County and also with Jefferson County for the other side of the project, we comply with all of those regulations, and we have the design as we set back, as we show you today. The applicable setback from Any public right-of-way for Gage County is 469 feet. The average distance from any of our turbines to the center line of any road in the project is 1,099 feet, with the closest turbine to the center line of a road being 549 feet, so over 80 feet greater than the county requires for setback from the roads. The applicable setback from any non-participating property line for Gage County is 639 feet. These applicable setbacks are based on the total turbine height, and then, for instance, the non-participating property line setback is 1.5 times the total turbine height, so that gets you to 639 feet. And the closest turbine to any non-participating property line is 644 feet, with the average distance of a turbine to the closest property line being 1,248 feet. Gage County requires a 1,320-foot setback from any non-participating owner's dwelling. The closest turbine to any dwelling, whether participating or non-participating in the project, to a turbine in the array proposed today is 1,667 feet. The closest turbine to a non-participating landowner's dwelling in Gage County is 1,881 feet. The average distance from a turbine to a dwelling, whether participating or not participating, is 2,604 feet. As mentioned, included in the county zoning regulations, there is an obligation that during the design, for us as the developer, to model the sounds and shadows of residences near the array and minimize any impacts. We complied with that requirement and have minimized the effects. The maximum shadow effect on a non-participating residence is 35.3 hours in a year, or 0.4% of the year. The average duration of a shadow on a residence that's not participating in the project is 11.8 hours in a year, or 0.14% of the year. The county ordinance also allows a maximum sound level to residents in the project of 60 dBA. For the array we proposed today, that maximum sound level at a residence is 13 decibels below the county regulation, or 47 dBA is the maximum as we model it at any residence within the array. And the average maximum sound level modeled at the surrounding non-participating landowners is 33.6 dBA. As mentioned, the project complies with all of the Gage County setbacks requirements. When we take into consideration the Gage County zoning regulations and include our high-level industry standards of NextEra successful wind farms, it's our experience in the hundreds of jurisdictions that we've done business in across the country that when we build a project, it ends up being one that the community can be proud of. But we do get some common questions, and at the pleasure of the commission, I'll go through some of those common questions that we hear. I've done this presentation for the Plan Commission. Members of the community have probably heard these issues before. So feel free to interject, actually, if you have further questions as I go through them or cut me off because you've heard enough. The first one I want to address, Mary, if you can flip it, is at the Plan Commission hearing, we did have the condition placed on our application that we provide the viewshed analysis from the Homestead National Monument to the project. We provided that report. It's part of the application. I present here just the summary. Our conclusion is that it is not visible, that no turbines, no blades of turbines are visible from the Homestead National Monument. The reason we can draw that conclusion is because of the terrain between the Homestead National Monument and the project. The Homestead National Monument is approximately 14 miles away from the closest turbine, and between those locations there is terrain variations such that it blocks the line of sight. So there's a couple hills that prevent you from being able, you'd have to see through the hills to be able to see any blades of the turbines. We provided that to the Plan Commission and also to the representatives of the Homestead National Monument. That's the first question I wanted to address today. And the second, which is probably the most common question we get in any of the jurisdictions we work in, is the roads, because it is a valuable part of the county. Came up during a public opinion survey. We recently did a survey both in Jefferson and Gage County to assess the community's interest in wind projects and get their feedback. And one of the areas they highlighted was on the roads. It was a concern even before the project specifically was brought up and any questions were raised about the project. People volunteered that one of the concerns was the county roads. So we included in our application a draft road use agreement. It's my understanding that it has been reviewed by the county attorney, and we've also talked to the highway superintendent about it. It appears to be acceptable to both, and as stated by the representative from the Plan Commission, it is our obligation to make sure that we maintain the roads in good condition throughout the construction of the project, and that at the end of the project, the roads would be in as good or better condition than when we started. And we do that by doing a video inventory of the project. As mentioned, we take representatives from both the county and our personnel that will be responsible for the project during construction, and we video record the roads beforehand. And then at the end of the project, we do a second video inventory, and any areas where it is deficient, we would be obligated either to perform the work or compensate the county if they perform the work. And it is our experience in the jurisdictions we've worked in before. We've had great success in working with counties to make sure even during construction those roads are maintained well. We do have to do some upgrades to the roads in order to get our equipment to the site, including placing radiuses in for delivery of the equipment. And we'll work with the highway superintendent and present that plan and the shipping route plan. One of the specific areas of concern brought up by the highway superintendent was that we not trench through roads, that we bore underneath them, and we will incorporate that into the road use agreement, and it will be our obligation to bore under the roads to a depth of 60 inches below the lowest point of the road, and that we, you know, not trench through. So that was one of the main concerns of the representatives of the county. Another question that often gets raised is on the question of property values. The implication is that the project would negatively impact the value of property in the area. I presented, and as evidence we provided to the clerk, a Lawrence Berkeley National Labs study that was conducted to test that hypothesis and funded by the Department of Energy. Berkeley National Labs studied 10 areas surrounding 24 wind farms in 9 states. They looked at over 7,400 sales transactions at various stages of operations, constructions, and before project announcement. Their conclusions were that homes in the study area analyzed were not stigmatized by the arrival of a wind facility. Second, none of the models found evidence that a view of a nearby wind facility impacts sales prices. And third, homes in the sample within a mile of a turbine had not been measurably affected by the presence of a wind facility. And we provide that report to the county and as evidence to support that claim. Another question we often get is, do wind turbines adversely affect the health of residences living near them? To investigate, the American Wind Energy Association, which is comprised of over 2,500 companies and 120 universities, commissioned a panel of experts to perform a comprehensive review of peer-reviewed literature on various aspects of wind turbines and health effects. The panel was comprised of medical doctors, scientists that specialize in sound, and professionals that specialize in acoustics. The conclusion of the expert panel were threefold. First, there is nothing unique about the sounds and vibrations emitted by a turbine. I think that conclusion is very important, that there's nothing unique about the wind turbine sounds. It's things we experience every day in various forms. Second, that the body of accumulated knowledge about sound and health is substantial. And third, the body of accumulated knowledge provides no evidence that the audible or subaudible sounds emitted by wind turbines have any direct adverse physiological effects. Wanted to make sure I quoted that properly. Next, Eric can also state from experience that we have never received a confirmed or documented claim of health effects due to its 9,500 wind turbines on 100 wind farms. So from experience, we can validate those studies and those findings. Moreover, by following Gage County's zoning regulations and designing to the same high industry standards of our other successful wind projects, there's no reason to expect any adverse health effects resulting from this Steel Flats wind project. Another common question that county officials and participating landowners often bring up is the decommissioning of the project. We also submitted in our application the draft decommissioning agreement, and I'll note that both when we get to a finalized decommissioning agreement and road use agreement, we'll be back for the county board to consider and sign those documents. So we will be back in front of you for those documents as well. And I want to point out that, as stated by the Plan Commission representative, we do have the obligation within our lease agreements to decommission the project, and that obligation is to the individual landowners. And we have the obligation to enter into this agreement with you, so as part of the zoning regulations. So I think, and I like to point out, specifically associated with this project, the Steel Flats Wind Project will have that obligation with you as the counterparty to that decommissioning agreement. The Steel Flats Wind Project is also the entity that has the power purchase agreement with Nebraska Public Power District, which gives it a revenue stream. So the common question we get is, what happens if NextEra Energy Resources goes away, or NextEra Energy Resource and Energy Incorporated goes bankrupt? I think the best answer I can give is the Steel Flats Wind Project still has a contract, an existing would continue with Nebraska Public Power District, and it still has an obligation to the county to decommission. So there will be both be the contractual relationship with the specific project entity and a revenue stream from a contractual obligation to Nebraska Public Power District. I hope that provides some insight into kind of the project as it relates to the decommissioning agreement. The next common question I'd like to discuss and address is, at our March 5th open house in Diller, we had a question about what happens with emergency response associated with the project. Are we taxing the resources of the county anymore because of the new facilities? And I point out that each of our wind facilities, at the over 100 projects that we have as a company, has a project-specific emergency response plan. And in that emergency response plan, there are a lot of common tenets. The first is that our personnel perform any tower rescue. So whenever we go to a turbine, we go in a buddy system to make sure that there is at least another person there in the event of injury to be able to evacuate. All our personnel are trained on tower rescue, and we have tower rescue equipment readily available for those people to go to do work on the tower. We do not ask that the county provide greater training to their emergency responders to be able to rescue from the tower. We would provide that service. We would do that on our own, and all of our wind operations employees are trained in that for that purpose. The second thing we often get questions about is what happens if there's a fire. Fires are extremely rare, but in the event of a fire, and in our procedure, it states that we don't ask anyone to climb the tower to fight a fire in the nacelle, which is the tower portion of the turbine. We direct response personnel to protect the surrounding fields and pastures and trees. So that emergency response is there to protect the landscape and the adjoining facilities, not the specific turbine. And I bring up, and a lot of the people that are in the audience have probably heard me state this many times before, but we're the first company to apply for and receive OSHA's VPP status at any wind facility. So OSHA's VPP is a voluntary program where you invite OSHA auditors in to look at your facilities, review your procedures, do actual cultural review. So they sit down and interview individual operations employees to see if the culture of the company is a safety culture. And in their review of the procedures, we actually got the VPP star status, which is the highest status they can give, that star status. So I think it speaks to both our ability to have good, robust procedures for things like emergency response, and also the culture of our company, is that we stress highly the safety of our operations employees and of all our employees. So if I get a paper cut, that's bad culturally for me. So, and I think the last thing I'd touch on is the wildlife and natural resources. We have worked with the Nebraska Game and Parks. We've invited them and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They participated in a site tour, so they went out and looked at the project area. We've also conducted a variety of assessments for the project, including archaeological assessments, floodplains analysis, wetland surveys, habitat and listed species assessment. As part of our application, you see a flora and fauna section, which speaks to those species of flora and fauna in the area that would be that are listed. We also did avian surveys in the spring and fall, raptor nest surveys in the spring, and prairie grouse breeding surveys. That's my kind of the common question section. Of course, I'm willing to speak to other questions that the board has. But to overview the project again, the applications for those 12 turbine locations located in Gage County and one alternate location, adjoining facilities that would include roads, access roads to turbines, and underground collection cables, which connect the turbines together and allow us to transport the power to the centralized substation. There is public support for the project. As I mentioned, we commissioned a survey for both Jefferson and Gage County, and the results were positive. It showed a 73% support in Gage County for the proposed project. And we conclude the following. We provide the following as evidence. That the evidence in the record before you demonstrates that the project complies with and further Gage County's comprehensive plan. The project will assist Gage County in meeting several of the county goals, including in Section 2.3, Policy 1.6, to promote the development of commercial wind farms via special use permits. In Section 2.2, to broaden the county's economic base and expand employment opportunities. And in Section 3.4, to encourage the commercial development within the county while allowing for compatible land uses. The evidence in the record before you demonstrate the project complies with Gage County zoning regulations, and specifically with those regulations that apply to utility-scale wind energy generation facilities. As required by the guidelines for approval of special use permits, the proposed use of the land is compatible with and similar to the intended and permitted use in the district, and as stated before, the use is in accordance with the comprehensive plan. And the use will not require rezoning, change the character of the district, be detrimental to adjacent properties, or tend to depreciate the value of surrounding structures or property. Through our application, supplemental materials filed with the clerk, and the information and evidence provided today, Steel Flats Wind Project has provided the county with sufficient information and evidence to allow the Board of Supervisors to consider the proposed project. Finally, based on our survey and experience, there's broad support for the project in Gage County. For these reasons, and on behalf of the Steel Flats Wind Project and the 27 landowners participating in the project, we respectfully request the Board of Supervisors follow the Plan Commission's recommendation to approve the special use permit.
Questions? Before we go to questions, Mr. Dockery, is that right?
That's correct.
There will be several items we'll have to get in a motion for to accept and place on file as we receive data through this hearing. So we're starting to pile up. And so we will have, there's a wind, as you spoke to, a wind turbine sound and effects expert panel review, and then the impacts of wind power on residential properties. So we'll submit those later at the end and place those on file. Questions? Gentlemen, yes, sir.
I guess one question I have never ever heard yet, what is the cost going to be to produce this electricity?
That is an industry confidential because of the nature of the energy business and the competition of the energy business. It's confidential information between us and MPPD. So I wouldn't present that as evidence today. I will say that, unfortunately, the member from MPPD wasn't able to be here today, but he did state on record in Gage County that they got a good price. They're very happy with the price. I don't know that I could.
I mean, is it two times higher than what we're paying now, three times higher? Any idea there?
Oh, yeah. No, it's very similar to the rates you currently pay. And I will also highlight this is a long-term contract. Other forms of generation, because of fuel fluctuation, you get a lot of variation over time, so they wouldn't commit themselves to a 20-year agreement such that we've committed to. Mm-hmm. So the power for the wind is very similar to the existing wholesale prices and is a firm price throughout the 20 years of the project. It doesn't fluctuate with fuel, natural gas price, coal price, and things like that. So it's not twice as high. It's not twice as high as the wholesale power from other types of generation.
I have heard, you know, what the cost was going to be to the consumer. Another question. I have heard, correct me if I'm wrong, these turbines are going to be working 35% of the time. Is that correct?
That's incorrect. So the availability of these turbines, which means the time that the turbine would be able to operate if the wind was sufficient, would be over 95% available. So that's the operation, to make sure that they're running and they're available for wind. The capacity factor is the amount of energy produced in a ratio against the total amount of energy that could be produced if it ran 100% of the time. And to kind of give context, so like a nuclear power plant has a capacity factor of around 90%. So, you know, 90% of the total power it could produce if it were at nameplate capacity, 100 megawatts or 500 megawatts the whole year, it produces about 90% of that actual electricity. So there's, you know, 10% of the time where it's either at partial or in an outage such that it doesn't produce electricity at all. Coal plants tend to be in the upper 60s to 70% capacity factor range. Peaker plants, so there are some types of electrical generation, like a natural gas peaker plant, that's designed for supplying power during times of peak demand. So when there's, like in the summer, you're pumping a lot of water, and, you know, the base load units, like a natural gas and a coal plant, is already at its full power output. They have these units such that they can make up the difference between that, you know, base power versus where the actual demand's at. So that's a peaker unit. Those run 5 to 10% of the time. The wind project, and this project specifically, will have a capacity factor over 50%. So it's similar to, it's a much greater than those peaker plants and peaker type structures. It's less than a coal unit on average, more than generally a combined cycle gas plant. Those tend to run, and I get the statistics from the Energy Information Administration. They provide the run hours, which is where I get this information from. Natural gas on history has been 40 to 60%. And in the industry, you would expect that to go up a little bit more because natural gas plants actually, because of the reduction in natural gas price recently, they actually run more percent of the time because their fuel cost is on the margin. So ours capacity factor is over 50%.
So they will be producing electricity over 50% of the time, you're saying?
Yeah, yes, yes, yes.
Didn't realize the wind blew that much. But
yeah, you have there's a great wind resource in Nebraska.
All right.
What percentage of the time is there supposed to be adequate wind to run them?
Oh, so when I say the capacity factor is 50%, that means at any point in the power curve, right, it's producing power. So at really low winds, like in the 6 miles per hour to 7 miles per hour, it produces electricity, but less electricity than when the wind's blowing at 40 miles per hour. So it's producing power. That 50% capacity factor isn't really truly a measure of the amount of time that it's producing electricity. It's more a measure of the electricity it generates versus the nameplate capacity. On the amount of time it will produce some amount of electricity, that's going to be 90%. I mean, it's a large amount of time. There is sufficient wind in the county to produce electricity, just not the full nameplate of the project.
There still has to be backup. What I'm getting at, there still has to be backup generation power when these are not online and are not producing, correct?
I can speak to the broad industry. I shouldn't speak to MPB's specific system. Mm-hmm. But broadly, this is a 75-megawatt project. I would, and I should have these statistics, but I don't. I would expect that NPPD's system is probably around 10,000 megawatts. 5,000. So NPPD's system is about 5,000 megawatts. So the system as built on the wholesale electric market is very good at compensating small swings in demand because, a factory can trip offline or can go offline unscheduled, so it can compensate for swings in megawatts. So generally, there is not there isn't a dedicated backup to a wind facility. It's the system compensates for the various movements of various demand and power. Because, to be honest, conventional power plants trip offline, and the system has to balance that against demand. Right, a coal unit can have some defect in a pumping system and the coal unit trips offline, and that's a 400 megawatt swing, or if a single unit of that coal plant trips offline, it's a 50 megawatt swing. So those swings are designed into a system, and I don't want to speak specifically to MPPD's system, but there are ample instances of penetration of wind in a market of greater than 10%, and they're not needing further generation installed on the system to compensate for it because of the way the electric grid is designed to meet changing in demands and changing in flows. So
there's enough backup in place now, you're saying.
Right. And the system, the assumption that because there are 75 megawatts of new wind being on the system that there will need to be 75 megawatts of some other generation type also installed in the system to compensate for it, that's a false premise.
No, I agree.
Yeah. Right. I got you into the weeds on the electric generation. Sorry.
I've got some questions on the decommissioning part of it. And I read through the draft, and I guess I'm not – I would like it to be a finalized plan at this point in time of approval. But regardless, it said that the concrete would be removed to a depth of 4 feet.
Correct.
And are these pads only 10 foot deep?
That's correct. So the finalized design is close. We can tell you it's going to be around 10 feet deep. So there will be portions of the concrete pad that will remain in place. And that's largely, the foundation is designed such that there's a pedestal that's about, 3 or 4 feet deep where the actual tower sits on, and it's 15 feet wide. And then from that, it's a spread footer type foundation, which means it goes from, the 15 feet and it spreads out to about 45 feet when it's at the base of the foundation. It's a spread footer type. So, the plan, in the decommissioning plan is just to remove a portion of that such that it doesn't impact farming or agriculture for the life of the project. And that's generally, in jurisdictions we work in, the wish of the landowner, because they do not want a large portion of their land disturbed again. So if it's just 4 feet deep, there's less disturbance when the foundation is taken out, and the remaining portion of that concrete is does not impact them.
And if the landowner wanted all the concrete gone, how much of an issue is that?
So in the agreement, it stipulates that it is to 4 feet. So that is our contractual obligation, and we would work with that because there is, there's greater cost if you want to take out the rest of the foundation. And being in the industry, we don't want to bear that cost if we don't need to.
And I guess the other thing that I didn't see in the decommissioning was that anything about any chemical contamination from the generating towers, I assume there's a number of gallons of some type of fluids up there, and probably ain't going to happen, but looks like it ought to be addressed.
We can work on the decommissioning agreement and provide some more clarifications in there, but ultimately any association cost of the decommissioning and a lot of those things are regulated by things like the EPA on, if you spill oil, you have to, it's an obligation. I mean, just because it's not in the decommissioning plan doesn't mean it wouldn't be an obligation as a regulatory requirement on us to remove that. So, we can provide some, that's why it's still in draft because, we need to work with the county to make sure that, what is the concern of the county gets addressed by the agreement. But it is our obligation, of course, to remove
it. And I may have missed it, but I didn't see anything in there about Nebraska Public Power being also tied into the obligations of this decommissioning.
That's because it wouldn't. It would be, and what I was trying to highlight in my remarks is that it's the project company that would have the obligation to decommission it because it's the project company's assets. What I was just trying to highlight is, that project company isn't without revenue. And isn't without security. So, and as part of their revenue, right, is this contract with Nebraska Public Power District. And I was just trying to highlight that it's the counterparty. The Steel Flats Wind Project is the counterparty for that agreement with Nebraska Public Power District. So as you look at that company has a contractual revenue stream and a contractual obligation to decommission. So that project company has levers to pull, I think, is what I was trying to highlight, though I didn't do it very well, apparently.
During your spatial, the zoning meeting, and I believe I heard it on the radio, too, one of the Jefferson County board members made a comment that you still have to submit yet a construction permit, or maybe I'm phrasing that wrong, or you still have to, because when the comment was made that the decommissioning proposal would be done and submitted before construction, or and maybe I'm phrasing that wrong. I don't know. Do you still have another permit yet to go for yet or not?
Yes. So there's a zoning permit is the term used by the county. It's basically a building permit. I have to come get a building permit. Administrative permit, but before I can do that, I'll have certain obligations to make sure I'm complying with the zoning regulations. I'll have to provide specifically like 911 addresses, and I'm proposing that we'll have this decommissioning plan in place before those zoning permits get issued.
So, but that will be done before you start building then?
That's correct. We're obligated to have that building permit. The special use permit application just allows the zoning administrator to issue a zoning permit. So I have to come through this process before I get to the zoning permit. I hope I'm – my.
That's correct. Okay.
Questions? I have a question for the employees that work for your organization and those that are here. How many of those here live within a mile of a wind generator, and how many employees in your organization live close to?
I can't speak specifically to the exact stats. We do have a number of employees, of course, that live and work in the project area because they're there operating and maintaining it. I don't know the statistic of how many live within a mile, but there are. We have wind technicians that live near the project and go to work every day and work on the wind turbines.
That's one of the things, the impact on the residents. It'd be nice to know the employees that work for the organization that go and put these up, and we say that there's no impact and the shadows and things like that. It'd be nice to know if they're in your backyard as well.
Well, I would. I've worked at a wind farm. I spent 2 years in our operations group at two different wind projects, one in West Virginia and one in North Dakota. My office, when I worked in a project in North Dakota, was, you know, less than a quarter mile from the closest turbine. It was like 1,000 feet from the closest turbine. We don't have that setback requirement for our own facilities, right? And I was right next to it. My office was there. In the mornings, as we mentioned, you know, there's, I think the maximum here is like 35.3 hours a day. You know, I was at work very early in the morning, so, you know, those 30 minutes on a given day, I saw shadow flicker. So I can attest that I've experienced it. And the sound, I mean, I was closer than most people. I've experienced it. And I can state that I have not had any health effects.
Just from your personal residence, it's one thing to go to work and work there and then leave, but when it's in your backyard, the perception may be a little bit different. I just asked that as a question, not for or against. I'm just saying that would, as you move through these projects, I think there's some value in saying, when we speak to these things, I can speak firsthand because I live within so far of one. Not me personally, but figuratively speaking. So that's all. Just ask that. Any other questions? No? Okay. Thank you for your time. And again, as we collect this data, we'll submit this to file. Next on our list, Mark Engler. Even though I have it written down here, name and address for the record. I think we all know you, but just for the official record.
I'm Mark Engler, National Park Service, Superintendent at Homestead National Monument of America. And I'd just like to thank you for having this dialogue today. And while our viewshed's concerns have been, I think for the most part answered here, I wanted to take this opportunity to share with you comments or points and our values that we shared at the earlier Gage County Planning and Zoning meeting. And we're also very grateful, in addition to this dialogue, that within the planning and zoning regulations that there is a part in there that wants us to talk about the impacts to such places as Homestead National Monument. So we're grateful for that as well. But I'd like to share that the National Park Service was created to conserve unimpaired many of the world's most magnificent landscapes, places that enshrine our nation's enduring principles, and places that remind us of the tremendous sacrifices Americans have made on behalf of those principles. They are the most remarkable collection of places in America for recreation and learning. Visitors can immerse themselves in places where events actually happened and enjoy some of the most significant natural and historic places in America. These are places that offer renewal for the body, the spirit, and the mind. As required by the 1916 Organic Act, the special places must be managed in a special way that allows them to be enjoyed not only by those who are here today, but also by generations that follow. Enjoyment by future and future generations can be assured only if these special places are passed on to them in an unimpaired condition. We cannot do this alone within the National Park Service. In order for us to be successful, we need your help. These special places need your help. As we have a dialogue on the development activities around us, I hope you will keep in mind things that are of value to the National Park Service. We value renewable energy. In fact, we at the Monument have used solar power. We've tried to search out and purchase wind-generated power. Our exhibits even showcase wind-generated power. We also value the guests, the view that our guests have when they're visiting our sites. Thus, the placement of towers is important to us to enhance the experience of those visiting the monument. I can share with you that view sheds have been traditionally important to us. In fact, in the late 1960s, we started talking about this, and in 1971, we purchased, through the work of Congress, scenic easements to minimize the potential impacts of industry and commercial development. In fact, we know Homestead is one of the first, if not the first, in the Nebraska to secure easements to protect view sheds. Then in 1988, the National Park and Conservation Association released a paper that an additional 4,400 acres were needed to better manage the important view shed at Homestead National Monument. We appreciate the support from NextEra in providing an analysis of our view shed, which shows little to no impact in relationship with the Steel Flats project. We also thank the Gage County Planning and Zoning Board for asking for an analysis of the view shed, that it be shared with us in relationship to this project. We also value the unique story that Southeast Nebraska has to tell. In 2007, with the help of local and regional organizations, individuals, local and state and national leaders, and the Gage County government, we opened the Homestead Heritage Center. This $6 million project was sited to capture views of the landscape to tell America's homestead and agricultural story. We value the night sky and wonder if technology that manages night lighting, such as the strobes and red lighting, can utilize technologies that will minimize those impacts so we can enjoy the Milky Way. We can enjoy the night sky. We also value the natural sounds, the summer locusts, crickets, birds singing, and coyotes yelping. We also want to make sure you are aware the sound with wind turbines travels not only through expected sound waves, but also through the ground, through our feet. These are some of our values that I think make Homestead a very special place. I also think that we need to reflect on the economic values of such places like Homestead National Monument of America and the benefits of tourism associated with these places. We often think of industry, retail, and agriculture. I hope in this equation we not lose sight of tourism and how this helps diversify our economy. As well, I believe Homestead National Monument is a part of our community identity, a source of pride. In World War II, there was a ship named the USS Homestead. Didn't last long, but there was a ship with that title. We also saw a postage stamp in 1962 that commemorated the Homestead Act. And in just a few short years, we'll also see a newly released quarter with Homestead National Monument of America on it. Thank you for providing this opportunity this morning for me to have this dialogue with you. And thank you for helping us achieve success in the past. We're very fortunate to be able to call Gage County our home. Thank you.
Questions for Mark?
Mark?
Yes. You said you had, you've gone out and purchased some scenic easements, or you needed 4,400 acres to do that?
We purchased the National Park Service. We started to grow concerned with development around us, so the National Park Service went out and purchased easements in 1972 after having authorization by the United States Congress to do that. So we around the monument, although they are small, they're to the north of us. And then in 1988, there's a group that often works to enhance and improve the parks or help us maintain the parks, and that's the National Park Service Conservation Association. And they, after looking at Homestead, released a paper saying that that Homestead really needed an additional 44,400 acres to help manage that view shed. And that was a paper, a study, the report that they released back in 1988.
So have you done that too then, or that was just a paper release?
That's right. That was just a paper release.
More questions for Mark?
Thank you.
Next on our list, I have a couple of names here who've written them down but didn't want to speak. So if you've changed your mind and you'd like to speak, we can. But I'll go down to Melvin Brand. Just officially name an address for the record, please. Thank you.
My name is Melvin Barron, 58160 Highway 8, Diller, and we live right along Highway 8. I'd like to express our views on why this steel flats project should continue and go ahead. First of all, it's a green energy. Wind is always here. It's not going to pollute the groundwater. Like oil or gas or coal or anything like that. The income from the steel flats project would be the tax would be good for the counties, both Jefferson and Gage, for the school system and for the counties overall. And the employment that is created by 150 construction people, those people will be living in the community for the year, lodging, they'll be purchasing at restaurants, grocery stores, and so there'll be money there also. And the income for the landowners, if you're a farmer, well, you'll probably spend that money that you get from them, because we know how to spend money. Let's see. Well, I guess I talked about and then the jobs with wind energy overall throughout the country or throughout the world creates a lot of jobs in making equipment and trucks and trucks hauling the equipment. So there's just because there's 150 jobs in the county or in the project, there are a lot of jobs outside of that are delivering throughout the country, delivering trucks with trucks and railroads and everything. So the wind energy throughout is making a lot of jobs. So in closing, I want to respect the opinions of those that are for the project and for those that are against the project. So I thank you.
Thank you. Next on my list is Kevin McIntyre. Name and address for the record, please.
I'm Kevin McIntyre. I live at 121 Meyer Street, Odell. I have an acreage in Section 20. I'm the guy that you talked about, and she talked about in the beginning, that had the concerns of the noise. My question is, well, my belief is that the regs that were wrote, or the rules, I'd like to see that at a half a mile for not participating, and for participating members, they can have it as close as they want. Now, they said the decibel rating of 60 decibels at your house. I believe that's what they stated. I mean, they said it'd be 33, but it could be as high as 60. I think if I showed up at your houses with a radio and played it at 60 outside your bedroom at night, I'd be arrested. You wouldn't want to tolerate it. I don't want to have to tolerate it. I feel bullied that I'm going to have to put up with this. It's kind of a place where I want to build my retirement home. And if I have to, I guess I won't build there if it's going to be something I have to put up with. But I understand the farmer that wants the money. It's really good money, what I've heard. I just would like to see it further from my doorstep than he said it was 1900 one day, and I laser ranged it at about a little over 1600. With mine. I mean, I went out and found their post in the ground and took my rangefinder and done it back to my building. And you can find all kinds of information on the internet that says that it's loud at that, or you can find, I could fill you full of paperwork to read, and he can fill you full of documents, which he just did. He's an excellent salesman. He's selling a project. That's his job. He's going to tell you what you want to hear because it's his job to do that. I would also like to know what percentage of electricity stays here. I think NPPD is not purchasing all of it. To my knowledge, from what I've heard, a portion of the energy is leaving. He didn't say what it's selling to us at, but it's not going to make our electric bill cheaper. I mean, Gage County's going to gain $70,000 in taxes. I guess that's good. And I just wish that your setback rules that were done were to a different standard. I know there's a lot of other things I want to say, but I guess that's about the extent of how I feel about it.
Questions for him? No. Anything else you'd like to say?
I can't sit here and say that I really like the idea of even looking at the things. I guess I'm one of them that they call NIMBYs or whatever they call it. Not in my backyard syndrome. And I guess that's what it is. When I vision building my house there, I want to go out on the back deck, sit there in peace and quiet, listen to the cows or listen to the birds. I don't want to have to listen to vroom, 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 vroom. Maybe it's quiet, I guess we all pray for rain at church. I'm going to pray for lack of wind, I don't know what to say else. I guess I think my wife talked with Terry. He knows how she felt. She couldn't be here today, so thank you.
Let's see. Alan Keelan?
Plegan,
sorry, I couldn't. Alan Cleveland.
This is Alan Cleveland from Odell, Nebraska. I live right by the high school. And actually, there's a windmill right there. And I don't know how loud that is, what a windstream decimals is or whatever. But I just got a couple questions. Ask you, basically, is there going to be an expansion? Is this going to be it, or is there going to be more? Don't know that. I travel around. I see a lot of sites. They start off and then they add more. So I don't know if this is going to be an expansion. for more or not.
Dan, this permit does, it just discusses those 12. It doesn't talk about anything as far as expansion, so I wouldn't know. It would be a separate request that would have to go through the same process.
Okay. That's about all I got, because it didn't go far enough east for me, but anyway, but just came to one of these meetings. I wanted to know more about the project itself. I didn't make it to the other meeting, so I thought I'd come up and talk a little bit about it. But, yeah, the windmill there at the high school, yeah, it does make noise. I feel sorry for other people. I don't know how loud these other ones are, but, you know, they do make a little noise, and hopefully you get used to it. But it is a good thing for our school. And I like this guy over here about the homestead thing. You know, I'm from Odell. We're still trying to keep our school. You know, Beatrice has got their school. This is just more money for our school to keep our school going. So I think it's a good deal. Thank you.
Cal Preble?
My name's Calvin Preble. I'm from Beatrice, Nebraska, 1201 Ella. And just like to voice my opinion that I think it's a good thing for Nebraska, for Gage County. This green, it's green and basically, and it's helpful in subsidizing our current problems with electricity and stuff like this, because these nuclear power plants are kind of up and down. They got a couple closed down, and I doubt if they even ever will open up again. And the dangers are the minimum as far as these things go, I believe. I personally have a piece of family farm down there. It's been in the family for over 100 years, and just a simple family farm, basically, but also a quite an avid outdoorsman. Been involved in scouting for 30, 40 years, and am an outdoorsman. Been reading various articles in the Nebraskaland Magazine and Omaha World Herald and different things about these wind farms across the country. And I basically think it's a good thing. It's progress since they've gotten rid of most of our hydroelectric and locally and stuff like that, up and down the Blue Rivers and stuff like that. I believe that something has to be done to help supplement our power needs across the country these days. That's all I have to say. Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you.
Gary Weiss?
I'm going to speak on the road bond project.
David Levy?
No, thank you.
No, thank you. Okay. And I think that's it. It looks like the rest is from NextEra. All right. Any further discussion?
Just
comments?
Like,
yes, Meyer.
I'll make one comment brought up about the taxes, the $71,000. And Patty or Lori can make sure I'm right on this. That's not – the county doesn't get all of that. That is prorated back out to the township, the school district, and so on. Yeah.
It's based on nameplate capacity,
and it's $71,000, but they keep making the comment that the county will get that. Well, the county does as a whole, but it's not – the county.
Thank you. Yeah, come speak to that on the record.
Department of Revenue, through their studies, the nameplate capacity rate is collected by the state of Nebraska. And then my understanding, they don't keep any, which I...
Right.
That's what they say. And this is based upon the current tax law right now. So obviously we all know that can change with incentives, you know, that come with wind energy. But that 3518 is based upon a megawatt. So in Gage County, I think it's like 20.4 megawatts being initially introduced to those 12 turbines. So that's how he came up with that 71,000. So as far as the transmission lines, as I stated in your report, the transmission lines are exempt. So we don't collect any taxes there. But what we will see also is that concrete slab will be assessed a tax with the real estate. So a good scenario, I guess, if you take a pad that's 40 by 40, I figured about 500 yards of concrete. So $100 a yard right now, you've got about a valuation of probably $50,000. Take that times 12. So you got about $600,000 in total that has to be taxed yet, that you'll see tacked on to that revenue. So that explain it.
But when he brought up the question about the schools, some of that will be going back to the schools and so
it'll
on.
Go back to the tax districts and just then be calibrated out that
just
way.
So people understand that and don't think that the county is getting
get
all $71,000.
Yeah.
No.
Me neither.
I had it spent already.
Yeah.
Yes, Gary.
I'd like to ask Paul if he wouldn't step up again after everybody's been through. I think there might be some more questions here for you. The first one that I wanted to ask was, it seems like there's a lot of decommission discussion that has gone on through this whole thing. Is there a high rate of decommission for some reason, or is there a reason that this decommission has become, you know, a big thing prior to the start of the project? And then the second thing was, is what is the actual life expectancy for a farm like this?
So decommissioning is a common question because of, you know, it's a large infrastructure within the county, and there's nothing unique about the conversations in this county. We have it in lots of conversations that we've worked in, and it's not because of a rash of decommissioning of new projects has occurred. It's just a common question we get because of the nature of the facility, which is, you know, a tall structure that, you know, wouldn't look good if it were not spinning anymore and 30 years from now were abandoned. So that's why the conversation occurs, and I think that's also the instance of why it's occurring now. I would point out that NextEra has recently decommissioned a project about 2 years ago in California. There was a 25-year-old project using technology on what was called lattice towers, similar to like cell phone towers, you know, the lattice structures. And we decommissioned a large portion of those turbines at a project and installed newer technology, and we were able to remove 100 of this older technology and replace it with one of the new technology. So NextEra has done it before and done it recently. I don't think that's why the conversation began. And when we look at these projects, you know, we invest on like a 30-year window. So our view is, you know, for at least 30 years it's going to be operating. But as we look at the technology, its life can be extended by simple tasks like replacing generators, replacing gearbox, replacing blades, such that the total decommissioning of the project wouldn't be 20 years. We see it as more like 40 years, so that we would continue to operate and maintain the project and do upgrades to the infrastructure there, being that steel tower with, you know, the steel tower isn't going to, you know, go away in 20 years. It'll continue to be a good structure for the 40 years, and we would continue to, you know, invest in the turbine to keep the technology and advance it. So does that answer your question?
I believe. So you're saying a 40-year life.
40-year. Yeah. Their design life's about 25 years, but we think once you repair things like the generator and gearbox, the 40 years is really what it makes sense at.
The second question I had for you is, what kind of staff for the 44 units that are going to be out there once the construction's done, and just the average everyday staff? Is there somebody going to be on hand? Is it the five people? Do they continue to be on staff 365 days a year?
That's correct. Okay. Yep, five people on staff, 365 permanent jobs in the community, and they work a 7 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Schedule during the day. They're on call if anything happens at night or on the weekend. And we have a 24/7 facility that operates all of our turbines, and it communicates to a centralized operations room, and so they're monitoring it when the on-site staff isn't here, such that they can call out that on-site staff to respond to emergency or to respond to a problem with the turbine.
Yeah, and I'm going to assume that they're not sitting on pins and needles just waiting for an emergency to happen. They got normal preventative maintenance type issues that they're going to be working on, I'm assuming, because as John was discussing earlier about hazardous materials, which probably more hazardous waste concern from the oils and stuff that's in there as opposed to a hazardous material. But
yeah, there isn't much. There is oil in the gearbox, and that's about it. There's grease and bearings and things like that, but the oil in the gearbox is about the oil substance in the turbine. And there is oil in the pad mount transformer, which sits immediately adjacent to the tower, down tower. It's mineral oil in that pad mount transformer. But yeah, they don't sit around just twiddling their thumbs until something goes wrong. We do maintenance cycles, so twice a year they would make sure in a month span that they climb all the turbines and do that greasing of bearings and things like that. And if you want me to talk to, we have a great deal of advanced technologies and advanced applications to predict and prevent failures. So we're looking at, you know, bearing temperatures, oil temperatures, the controls of the blades. We're looking at all of those parameters and making sure, even if it isn't an alarm level, that we are, if it's trending in a certain direction, like for bearing temperature, if we see a step change in the bearing temperature, we are able to address it, so we can send a crew out before failure to address the issue, whether it be, you know, a degrading bearing that we can repair before it actually repairs. So they have a lot of work to do in the 44 turbines and kind of that predictive stuff, and then the overall just troubleshooting when something goes wrong.
I think that's all the questions I had for you.
It's Terry.
Matt, one question. Is the positioning of these turbines set in stone already, or can the one that the gentleman, the tenant, spoke against, can it be positioned further away from his residence or proposed residence?
So the application presented before you today takes into account all of those setback requirements, all of the micro-siting requirements, and the mechanical loads analysis done by the turbine manufacturer. It is, in our estimate, the best location of the turbines in the facility, and those locations are advantageous for the project.
So it is set in stone. You can't move them.
So during construction, there will be instances of when they start doing excavation, they may move within 10 to 15 feet.
Okay.
And we'll run that through the planning administrator to make sure it's not a material change to our application and continues to comply. But the locations as a whole are the designed array. And take into account all those considerations.
Further questions?
I don't have another question. My concern with the decommissioning is not NextEra doing it in 2 years if something would fail, you know. My concern is 40 or 50 years down the road, whoever owns it at that time, which may not be NextEra, that's a long time, that there is a solid plan in place to put it back to where it was.
Yeah, I understand. I will work through that decommissioning plan, and hopefully we can address those concerns with that agreement in working with the county.
A lot of times we see similar things on reclamation, like on sand and gravel pits. When I lease land to a sand and gravel operator, we have very specific things on the reclamation as far as putting the restoring the topsoil, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Yours is a lot more technical, but similar situation.
Right.
So. And again, if anybody has any other concerns, you know, like John raised, by all means, share them with me so I can, when we're negotiating that, we can get them in there.
Gary.
There was one other question. I don't remember who brought it up, that I don't know if you'd have the answer to this or not, but the question was as far as the energy that's going to be produced being used in the state of Nebraska, or is it passing through into Kansas, or is there... Do you have an answer to that, or is that more an MPPD question? Because I don't remember who asked it, but there was...
All of the project output is being sold to MPPD, mm-hmm. And all of the project power is being injected into the Steel City substation, which is within Nebraska. So it's sold to MPPD for their customers and in order for them to meet their 10% goal in the state. Did that answer the question?
I believe it probably does.
Okay. Just my one last comment is this is probably the...
Matt, Bill has a question.
Yes.
Excuse me, I probably marked the wrong X in the box.
Here, come. Would you like to speak? Please, come.
Yep.
Name an address for the record, please. Yes, Bill.
Either for, against, or neutral. William Cook, Jr., 2809 Southwest 32nd Road in Beatrice. I lost my voice. First of all, you all made the... Lincoln Journal yesterday on the opinion page, valuing the Prairie Vista, which is very interesting. Just real quick, he's talking about this meeting today, the 12 426-foot tall turbines would be in Gage County, 32 in Jefferson County. He said, fortunately, the turbines will be below the horizon for Lonesad Monument, said wind farm project developer Paul Dockery of Next Extra Energy Resources. But Volkswind USA is targeting an area much closer to the Homestead National Monument for a wind farm, company official announced a year ago. Other nearby sites also may be considered, blah, blah, blah. The last part is very interesting, I think. State and local officials should begin working on a better system for evaluating the visual impact of wind farms. In the meantime, it'll be up to Gage County officials to do what they can do to protect the prairie vista around the Homestead Monument, a national treasure that last year attracted more than 100,000 visitors. I just had some questions. Most of them have been answered. When does construction start? We know that now. 150 workers on site. You know, how long are they going to be there? Evidently from July to December, whatever the period of time was. That's a lot of people with 42, but that's their business. I was really amazed that MPPD has signed on the line to be a purchaser. About 2 years ago, the president of MPPD said that if they were ever to be involved in wind energy production of electricity, they'd have their own farms. So this must be a change in policy of MPPD, which is wonderful they've done it, but they weren't going to do it 2 years ago. When will the power be available for sale? I presume right after December when they get it put up. And we talked about the sale to other states. It's all going to go into NDPD. I'm still confused on what nameplate capacity tax is and who sets this tax rate and where does the recommended tax rate come from. Because you talk about $11 million in the paper, that there's going to be approximately $11 million in nameplate capacity tax and property taxes will be generated for Gage County. And then you put in the little additional hooker that there'll be another $71,000 in tax revenue annually. You know, it just doesn't make sense. And I don't know, maybe you all know what they're talking about, but it doesn't. And I did a little simple division, $11 million over 30 years is $366,666 per year in 2013 dollars. What would this amount be in 2043 dollars, which is the 30 years down the road they're talking about? And how will it be paid? You know, when will the county receive that money to distribute to the school districts and other places that you all have to do? And then where does the additional $71,000 yearly come from? When will the first payment of $366,666 be paid to the county? Maybe they'd be grateful enough they just paid the $11 million right out of the chute, and then we wouldn't have to screw around with these annual payments. It may solve some of your budget problems. Yeah. There was that stipulation from planning and zoning, but I think Lisa addressed that, and it's been taken care of because they did approve the permit with the stipulation. I wonder, and this is you all's business, is the county board setting a dangerous precedent? What will you do? What will you tell Volkswagen, Volkswind, USA when they ask for a permit for an area that's going to be closer to the monument? If you approve this permit today and they come in, and we know they're coming in, and you deny their permit, I wouldn't want to be in your shoes. I don't know, maybe you all have seen it, maybe it's in the book. Have you seen any financial data, which would be balance sheet profit and loss on the next era, that would show that they have the resources to build a multinational facility and they are able to pay $11 million in taxes? On his opening remarks, I think the gentleman said NextEra is a subsidiary of a subsidiary of a subsidiary of a subsidiary. Now, you know, who's got their neck on the line? You all have been in business long enough that you know you can go subsidiary, 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 and you go down far enough, the one that's doing it doesn't have anything, and the ones above them aren't liable for anything. Just something I think you would want to know. Last thing, and I know you know it, by moving to approve this permit, you are endorsing the project, in my opinion, and I think you really need more information. I know on the decommissioning we don't have that, but I really caution you before you put your seal of approval on the project. Thank you very much.
While you're up here, the $11 million in property taxes, that's for Gage and Jefferson County. That's for the nameplate of all 44.
Is it?
And
okay.
That's over 30 years,
yeah,
the
yeah.
11 million.
Yeah,
so
I realize that.
You can divide it by 30 years and then divide it by the 44 towers, and that comes up to the $3,500 and some dollars per tower. So, and that's, Gage County has 12 of those. That's
okay.
Where Gage County, all the entities in Gage County will get the $71,000 a year.
So that's the 71s. So the 11 is reduced down to 71.
For Gage County,
yeah.
Yes. But the $11 million is the projected tax for the 30 years of this project based
yeah.
on the name.
No, I understand yeah. that. Yeah. I was misled by the Beatrice Daily Sun. It said over the 30-year life of the turbines, approximately $11 million in nameplate capacity tax and property taxes will be generated for Gage County.
No.
And that's...
Yeah.
There you go, Chris.
Anything else, gentlemen, ladies?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm looking at the assessor back there, and if Patty, can you come and maybe speak to the revenue line on this, on as far as the taxes and the assessed value and nameplate? Can you, in your infinite wisdom?
The only thing that my office will really be involved with is the concrete slabs under each of these towers. Lori already does something with MPPD, and it's sort of similar to that, isn't it? Or do you know for sure? Okay, basically what the state is going to do, and Lisa and I have worked a little bit together, it's on that megawatt nameplate capacity. The state will let Lori's office know the dollar amount or whatever that will be distributed. So my office, the only part that I understand that I get involved with is pretty much the concrete slabs underneath the towers. That would be the real estate that would come back to the Gage County. Everything else would be done through the state. I believe it comes through Lori's office from what Lisa and I have talked about, and then it is distributed. So,
do they spread that money out across the whole Gage, the money that comes in, or does that stay in a certain area?
I would think it would stay in the area that the...
Per tax district.
Per tax district, yeah. Mm-hmm. Through the...
Of location.
Of the location of the wind, yeah.
Each turbine...
So really, the Dale Rodale School is going to benefit really well.
It's kind of like our centrally assessed. I mean, basically, they give us a figure, and we have to distribute it through whatever, you know, entities it goes through, like what township, what school district, what fire district. So, I mean, this is first for me, too, so I've been working a little bit with Lisa trying to figure out, you know, everything about it. So.
And the school district would receive their share, would be Diller O'Dell, and then...
As far as if that's the only one that's going through, as far as I...
Diller O'Dell is the only school that's affected.
That's affected.
It's Fairbury. I mean,
yeah, then it would go into Jefferson. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
And the property tax that the county is going to collect on this is going to be relatively minimal, I mean, as far as...
Well, you would, I mean... Basically, for what the real estate part of it would be, the county would get, you know, what Lisa said, about $50,000 per pad, and, you know, times the 12.
Yep.
So you'd get that valuation.
Not actual tax knowledge, it's in
valuation. And then the tax would be whatever the state determines to be.
So,
you know, Gage County is a smaller portion of the whole picture than what the schools and so forth are.
Yes.
So does that kind of explain, hopefully?
Answer. I remember, Lisa, 3 years ago when we discussed, we didn't have wind generation. We had Hannah Keelan come in and go through our entire planning and zoning regulations, and I think that was a year and a half or a two-year process. And I know when we had meetings about and wanted input and resources about wind generation, you know, we were naive as a county. We didn't know, and we were looking across the state, and Hannah Keelan had worked, was the consulting group that we'd brought in to come up with these regs because we had none. And I know that we were looking for direction, and we have regs in place. Are they the best? Time will test that. But they are regulations that we have in place that we did not have before. This is new. There's no doubt in Nebraska and in Gage County the landscape is changing. Our hunger for electricity and needs for different resources and generation of electricity is coming. And I think we have to be good stewards of the land and recognize that when we change the landscape, we potentially change it forever. And we're modifying our natural resources that in some cases can never come back. So I don't think we approach this with any recklessness or any sense of coy or humor at all. I think it's very serious, and there will be people that are affected. And when you speak specifically to Volkswind, that's in my backyard, and that's coming. So.
Oh, sorry.
Well, it's coming, and I don't, you know, so I will, I'm just saying that, you know, we have to, I think we're trying to be on the front end of this, and time will tell, and then the future generations of what we do and how we do that, how we affect our natural resources, and I would agree, the wonderful landscape, and anyone that drives in the country in the spring and, in the summer, back in the day when they used to, we used to plow a lot more, and you would, that dark dirt, dark earth was turned over, and you would smell that, and you hear the meadowlarks sing and things like that. I'm being a little warm and fluffy here, I realize that, but those are the wonderful natural resources that we have that we need to protect. But there are influences and there are needs that we as human beings have, and those influences are coming, and we need to do the best we can to meet those needs and also protect our natural resources.
Chairman, if I could just address a little bit about the decommissioning concerns of the commission, because at the time when we wrote the regs, obviously decommissioning and roads were the two main problems. And when we started having Volkswagen also in my backyard, too, and reading agreements between the two companies as a landowner, what I found is, you know, personally as a landowner, if I had property involved in this particular project, the decommissioning is the most important part, because the longevity of this project, you know, I as a landowner, if I'm participating, want to make sure in my own agreement. So as a commission on the other side, we felt that it was also mostly the responsibility of the landowner to make sure within their agreement that they've met with NextEra Energy that they have addressed a proper decommissioning plan also within their agreement. So as a commission, we felt comfortable because there was a twofold. They have, as a landowner, they've addressed it within their lease agreement, and then, you know, we have the decommissioning part of our agreement placed on record, too. So.
And I would agree that it is the landowner's primary responsibility, but I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility that you could have contamination spread to adjoining property owners or, you know, the groundwater in general. I mean, sure. I mean, it has to be considered in the entire plan.
That's correct. I agree.
Okay, thank you. So, any further? Yes, Myra.
Yeah, I believe Phil brought up the question about financial strength of the company. And the first meeting we had with Road and Bridge with the company, they did provide us with financial information about NextEra Energy and the parent companies and so on and so forth. And I don't remember the exact dollar amount that they had profit for last year, but it is a very, very financially strong company. So, but I know everybody on the board didn't have an opportunity to see that. That you gave that to us when the meeting we had upstairs in the room, and I remember I took it home and looked at it and read through it all and stuff. So we have seen some of that. Yes.
Yes, Kathy.
I've just got a couple of comments. As far as the noise, I know that when I used to go to stay at my grandma's house, there was a train track that ran right within a block of her house. And the first night, you didn't sleep at all because the trains kept going by. And the second night, you were so tired that you could sleep through anything. And the third night, you didn't even hear them. And I'm sure it's the same thing with the noise from a wind generator. You know, after, you know, a very short period of time, you don't even notice or hear it. Also, I think it's kind of interesting that the Homestead Act was the original come in and tear up the natural beauty, farm, build cities, and you know, now we're trying to protect the nature and ambiance of the homestead, and I think that's very important. But the act in itself was come in and tear this all up. So those are my only comments. Oh, except for one other thing. If I were wealthy enough to own a big farm down there, I would love to have you come in, but I, not to sound like the girl here, but Dawn doesn't say anything. I would like to see them painted yellow and red and purple, and so it looks like a field of flowers out there. Now I'm done.
Okay. Yeah. Any further questions or comments in the public meeting? Yeah. Before we close the public meeting, I'd like to have a motion to place all the communication we received from NextEra during the public hearing on file. I need a motion to place that on file, please.
So moved.
Moved by Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Setzer. Kathy.
Vote. 7-0 to place everything on file that we've received. I need a motion to close a public hearing at 10:47. Unless last call, is there everybody have a chance to be heard and say what they needed to say? Okay, I need a motion to close a public hearing.
Okay.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Vote. Public meeting is closed. Public hearing is closed. 10:47. Next on the agenda is to approve or disapprove resolution on special use permit 2013-1, a commercial wind energy conservation system. Motion to approve or disapprove.
I move to approve.
Moved by Setzer to approve.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Vote.
Aye.
Oh. Okay. 7-0 to approve.
Hold it.
That's all right.
That's all.
No, you can if you want to, but they never switched our thing up there. Okay, when you turn yours on, they haven't put the right name in the right spot. Okay, the bulbs are in the wrong spot up there. Did you see that? That's John's.
Okay,
so John is abstaining.
Well, yes, can I come in here? I am fine with the wind energy project where it's located at, and, you know, the fact of the matter is the majority of it is in Jefferson County. They've already approved it, and, you know, it's not ours to stop. But I'm not okay with not having a decommissioning plan in place at the time of approval.
Just briefly, this is just an approval of the special use permit.
Yes.
Okay, which basically, again, the input's good because we can take that now and finalize these last documents. They can't start building these turbines until we get the two documents, basically the road construction deal and the decommissioning one, approved by this board and signed. And again, we'll get right on that, obviously, but there's the things that have been said here, both from the public and the board, obviously I'm going to take it that that needs to be in the document in some manner. And there's going to be a process. I assume it would be move fairly quickly, but...
And so the board will vote on the decommissioning process, and if we don't approve it,
yes,
we have to approve it for it to go forward.
Correct, and that's okay. Mr. Dogger.
Right.
It will be coming back, and, you know, hopefully, I'm sure I'll talk to the committees that are involved, as well as with Mr. Dockery and his staff, so that we can get these things. We don't have to come back three or four times and get your approval, but now we want to do something, tweak it a little bit.
I'm okay with approving this part of it.
Okay. Okay,
so clarify, John, vote for, against, or abstain?
Four.
Light the bulbs.
Okay. What is it?
7-0 to approve the special use permit. And I would accept a motion to have a point of privilege for 5 minutes, please.
I'll make a motion.
Dorn.
Second. I need a second.
Second by Setzer. Vote. Point of privilege, 10:50. We'll come back in 5 minutes.
Yes.
We will reconvene the Board of Supervisors regular meeting at 11 o'clock. Let's go down the agenda here. Discussion regarding economic development loan program, and I'll turn this over to Myron and Bill Demuth.
Bill, if you want to come on up and discuss this, a couple meetings ago, I believe we had I passed around a sheet of paper, or gave everybody a sheet of paper. We have an entity in the county that is looking for, some economic incentives, and Bill has put forth some proposals that we talked about broadly earlier, and this is from a specific company now, and we're not going to mention the company's name today, but in 2 weeks, the way things are going, we'll probably have it on the agenda maybe to approve it, and at that time the company will be known or whatever. And that's just a discussion between everybody that until we're ready for approval, that company's name doesn't need to be out there, I guess, with Bill and Matt and everybody. We've all discussed that. But it is a very viable company in the county. But, Bill, go ahead.
And as supervisors, if you need the name of the company, visit with Bill.
and we'll get that. But yeah, there will be full disclosure at that point of consideration whether
just so the press knows too. Before this is ever approved, that company will be known and stuff. But just in case something comes up between now and then, and it doesn't come to tuition, then we felt it wasn't fair to have that out there, and then something caused it to go wrong, and say, well, it was this or that, you know, and stuff. So, but that the company's name will be out there before it's approved.
Bill Demuth, Engage Executive Director. Thanks, Myron, for the lead-in and the opportunity. And I'm not going to take a lot of time. Project North is how we refer to it. It is a small business. They will be creating four new jobs, and they will pay an average wage of $20 an hour. So the company is financially strong and has experienced good growth in the last 3-4 years. They're expanding into a new product line that will reduce electrical costs and also incorporate solar into manufacturers throughout a 5-6 state area, as well as they do business in the Southeast. It is a loan, not really an incentive. That would be tied to the incentive guidelines. So the loan would be secured, and there would be a performance clause in the loan so that the jobs would remain for 8 years, or those funds would be, the interest would be repaid. And if the loan's not paid, land, buildings, and titles to vehicles will suffice as far as.
So there'll be real property for collateral?
Yes, sir.
Proposed loan amount?
150 total, 75 from the county, 75. We'll be approaching another political subdivision.
This will be an interest-free loan.
It's a 0% loan.
0% loan.
For 3 years. So it's a very short term. And it does three things. It grows a small business. It creates good jobs. $20 an hour average. None of those jobs will pay 14 or less. So it's not one of these where you have two at 100 and, you know, two at 15. They're the types of jobs where you're using skilled people, and they're using technology to grow their business. So they'll be using local suppliers for all of their build-out and technology purchases. And I actually have a list of those companies. And they even range from the south end of the county to the north end of the county as far as who those suppliers would be.
Myron, from a budgeting standpoint, where would the financing come from? Where would the dollars come from?
Well, you and I have visited about that it would probably come out of the inheritance fund. Have not visited with Donna. I guess that's a question I'll have yet. We can take this loan out of the inheritance fund, but then when it comes back, as the money is paid back, what is that deposited in, or how is that handled?
Put it back into the inheritance fund.
We could. Okay, that was...
So just specify...
Specify that. That was one of my thoughts or concerns, I guess, is so that we're really not depleting that over the 3-year period, but it is a loan that will be used out of there for this time period. But at the end of this period, it will be paid back and put back in there.
So it doesn't come off locally generated property taxes based on our assessment. It comes out of the inheritance line and then will be paid back into inheritance. So
correct.
Borrowing from and paying back.
Right. And if you wanted to put it into the perspective that typically economic development people put it in, a 3% loan, a 3.5% loan over 3 years is valued at about $8,500. So 4 into 8,500 is right around $2,000 per job. They also are agreeing to retain the current seven jobs they have. So you've got a stable company that has growth potential beyond that, but we're working on a conservative basis. So, and it sends a good message to other small businesses that pay good wages and have good, secure collateral that we'd like to stimulate that business in Gage County, whether they're in Gage County now or in the future.
So in 2 weeks, we'll take actual approval, just a discussion today. And the I guess, Roger, can you work with Bill or getting the agreement together so that we'll actually have that in 2 weeks? So think about it. Seek out information from Bill if you need it.
Yeah, please call.
We'll come back for actual consideration in 2 weeks. Any further questions, comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for hanging out all morning.
Yeah. Well, it's good. I found the project.
Next on the agenda, discuss and approve or disapprove specs and call for bids on sheriff's vehicles. Bids to be opened April 17th, 2013 at 9:45. A motion to approve or disapprove calling for specs and bids.
Move to approve.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. I guess we'll call Gus up and then talk about vehicles.
Good morning. This has been brought up to Law Enforcement Committee for a couple different times, and it's kind of getting to the point where we're a little urgent now. I just took one vehicle out of the fleet last week. It's 9 years old and 180,000 plus miles, and it's time to go away. So instead of taking a gamble on liability, I just decertified or not decommissioned, but deinstalled, we call it, and parked it. And that's the one you bid on earlier, or addressed earlier about putting on to surplus and get rid of it. I had approached the committee I want to go to pickups this time around. Now, the one I have, I found out works really well and it's pretty versatile for us. Talked to some different departments, and they've gone to a few pickups themselves because one resale is better, more versatile for us. And I talked to Galen, and he could use some of the type we have. Would be half ton, not three quarter a ton, but as they rotate out of my fleet, he certainly could use them if the board sees to do that in the outlying areas where I think he's a border grader operator. So it'd be dual purpose. But it came down to also a driving force is looking around. I had some information brought to me that some pretty good prices out there on pickups right now. Really good. Best I've ever seen. I think Gary and Myron contest to that. So that's what we're looking at, pickups. Number-wise, I know Gary had some thoughts on that. He was looking at more towards a four number. I'd like to see at least three. I got a vehicle. I think my average range of cars right now is 5 to 6 years. And 2 years ago, we bought three new ones. Then last year, I got one used one. And I think it's imperative that we get to the point where we have something coming in the fleet new every year. With losing our mechanic we had for many, many years, I'm going to see a spike in my cost because it's gone up for me just because it has. Some of the things I got before I don't get anymore. And so it's causing a little hiccup for us in how we get things done, but we're getting it done and getting through that. But if we keep newer vehicles in the fleet, I think you'll just save yourself a lot of time and money on downtime with maintenance costs and everything else going on. So that's what I brought to the committee, and that's what we brought up to the board today. We would certainly like to see three. And I know Gary, of course, you want to address a little bit more, but it is an exceptionally good price. If I could buy one at that price today, I'd probably try to get a loan and get one. I talked to our local dealer that this model was, or this brand was, trying to find out information about it, and they have no idea how the price is that low. So anyway, it's out there for discussion and hopefully some approval. So I'll open up to questions if I can. Yes?
How do you get paid for then?
I believe you talked about, was it inheritance, I believe?
Inheritance. There's a small amount left in the budget for vehicle purchase or whatever, and that is what the committee talked about was that's probably our one option right now is to have this come out of inheritance. And looking at it that, well, Gary will probably explain the four a little better, but looking at it as several years here, not –
okay.
Not it's not for this year and for next year. I mean, this is more of a.
I guess I hesitate to pull too much out of that inheritance for this purpose. Myself, I'm speaking for myself now. I know what we've got ahead of us here today. We're going to talk about roads, you know, and I know for a. I know from a good source that Jefferson County has over $4 million in their inheritance fund right now. So they're pretty stringent standing out of that inheritance fund. I would rather save out of that roads issues we're going to have ahead of us here, which is going to be a large sum of money, and put some of that down to that. Four seems like an awful lot of vehicles to me. That's all I got to say.
And that's one thing through the process is we're going to let bid, but we have to decide on the number. And just decide on the number.
Matt, before we go any further, just to kind of answer on or speak to Terry's, we've talked about this for the most of 3 years that I've been here to where we're, you know, we're at a deficit as far as miles on vehicles. We got a lot of vehicles that are high mileage vehicles, and we keep addressing it. And last year, you know, we bought three, and well, this should fix the problem a little bit. But kind of the idea is you know, the last pickup we bought, we spent approximately $26,000 somewhere in that ballpark, where we're able to save or buy a vehicle at, you know, somewhere probably. Lower than that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the words to phrase it properly, but I mean, where you're looking, it's a really good possible buy.
All right.
You got a substantial savings, possibly. Let me put it that way. You know, if it's a good buy at this point, probably next year it's going to be a good buy also. So rather than buying two this year, two next year, and just getting on this deal where we're replacing two every year, you know, maybe we buy four this year. Next year when we get when we start looking at it, maybe Gus only puts one into his budget. You know, at some point we got to get this to where we're not taking it out of inheritance. It comes out of the out of Gus's actual budget. And that's, you know, we got to get to a place where you can do that. Where we're at right now is not sustainable. Either that or we got to cut vehicles in the fleet, which, you know, I don't know, maybe that's a possibility that Gus needs to look at also. But there's, I guess that's where I'm coming from at it is, you know, you say three vehicles, I'm saying, well, you know, a good buy this year is going to be a good buy next year. Maybe we need to try and get caught up with the game at this point.
One other comment I'd like to make, is there any way we can restrict some of these miles we're getting on all these vehicles?
Well, we did years ago when they had a gas crisis. They restrict us X amount of mile. We just had to sit around and wait till we get a call. If it comes to that point in time, those things you look at doing, but, of course, the criminal element never takes a break, no matter what's going on with the economy. There's always a lot of things you can look at. It's just you try and not. Probably 20, 25 years ago, we shared cars, and they were driven 24/7 and miled out just as quick. So it was a dual purpose. When we started years ago and transitioned everybody to get in a vehicle, we moved them out, trying to get them out in the county, at least half the guys. So there'd be deterrent. They're out there around the community. Plus, the cars aren't being driven 24/7. They should last twice as long. Well, over the years, if we don't keep a new vehicle or two coming in every year, we get what we got now, where I'm getting cars that are 5, 6 years old, and I would imagine I probably have half my fleet that in the next couple of years probably need to rotate back out again, because we've never. A lot of counties will get to the point where they just try to be a program where they have something coming in every year, whether it's one or three or whatever. So, you know, I've talked to the staff already and said, you know, depending on how the money is, it could very well be we're going to have to cut back on cars. I hate to see that, Terry, because, like I say, it's more of a detriment, I think, than is a benefit, but it depends on circumstances that's given to me. You know,
so. One comment that I hear quite often, why is Gage County Sheriff Department patrolling state highways?
Well, because we don't have any state patrol anymore.
Okay, but is that our responsibility?
That's our responsibility. Years ago, it was a lot of politics, and some sheriffs said, we're going to do them all. Some sheriffs said, you stay, state highway is yours, you handle it. When I started, we had six troopers. Nowadays, I think we have probably one that's pretty active, working, probably two now. The rest are going through retirement or gone, and they don't replace them because they have the same problems the counties do on the state level. So we don't have as many troopers out there, and so if we're not out there, and I can attest when I've been off-duty driving, that there's a tremendous amount of speed. But we're on it. I try and encourage you guys to make the blend. You know, we walk the alleys in small towns, and they'll see us on the highways, and they'll see us a little bit everywhere. It's just we try to do a little bit of everything, but it's not consistently on 77.
So, Gary, could you speak to the current mileage of the vehicles that we have? I think the State Patrol, they run 70 or 80,000, and they get rid of them. What's the... Just maybe
I think they worked their way up to 125,000.
Oh, so they're higher now. Okay, but maybe speak or what's it? Who's LP? Is it LPD? Who's are they? I thought recently somebody was 70 or 80,000.
They could be. Yeah,
well, that's just broke in, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, for us it is.
But read some of our miles, because some of these cars too. This isn't going to be trying to create this bigger fleet. We're going to get rid of some of these.
Yeah. Currently, you got let's see, 1, 2. Looks like 6 units that are 130,000 miles or greater, and it appears as though 3 of those are units that are on the road every day. And then after that, you got another 1, 2, 3 more units that are over 100,000 but haven't reached 130 yet. And then you got Gus's pickup, which has 11,000 roughly, and 1, 2. About 4 other units, 5 other units that are in that 40 to 70,000 range. So, I mean, that's...
Got a high mileage fleet.
Yeah.
Was able to go back and find for the Gus's quarterly report for 2011-12, which would have been last July, that end of the fiscal year, took the miles driven, because they have the miles the deputies drive. I added up the miles for transporting prisoners, and also the miles for the part-time deputies or whatever when you go out to special events, come up to 294,000 for that fiscal year. So in other words, you're just short of 150,000 miles a year on 2 vehicles. That's it. That is if you replace 2 vehicles a year. Well, when Gary, the miles he mentioned there, basically you're to the point, or the miles we're using, you need to replace 2 vehicles a year at 150,000 miles a vehicle.
Good plan. Yes, Kathy.
I guess I understand, after talking to Matt, after he rode along and after I did, that their car is their office, and I understand why they don't like to share vehicles. But I also have a deputy that lives within a couple blocks from me, and I see his car sitting there. They work approximately 14 12-hour shifts in a month's time. That means the vehicle is on the road about 170 hours a month. The rest of the time, it's sitting on the street, and I believe that a desk is a lot less expensive than a vehicle is. And I think maybe they need to be set up more in the terms of sharing their vehicles. I understand for the ones that live out of the Beatrice area, but if you live in Beatrice, there's no place in town that you're more than 10 minutes away from the sheriff's office.
Well, there are some that share in town right now, because I don't have enough cars for all the deputies. So the ones that are on days share right now. And then, of course, the night shift, they have their own, because that's just the way it worked out. I'd rather have those guys have the cars to get going if they have to. So we're sharing partially, but I'll caution the board. If we go back, and I've already told the staff, if we start going backwards, I mean, it's just those things we can't help. If it's because of money, there's some decisions I have to make, be hard decisions, but I'm going to tell you, it's going to make a difference. I'm pretty sure it will. Because when you, I can't believe that we went home at 1 o'clock in the morning years ago. That would never fly nowadays, ever. We'd be getting called out constantly all night. So whatever we do now is going to be going backwards. And if it's for good reason, I understand.
I would rather invest in the people.
I understand. So would I. I made that statement to him, too. So, But there gets a point where no matter how many we replace, we've got to do something, because it gets to the point where it's a liability for the county, and that's why we're at this conversation today. We just can't continue doing this and not have a set plan. Now, I know years, sometime back, the budget used to be the sheriff would figure the cars into the budget. Matt, I think, and I had a valid point, he didn't necessarily like to have that there because that looked like overinflated the actual cost of running the office, if I remember correctly. Is it a cost of it? Yes. If it's every year, but it's up and down, because one year you get some, the next 2-3 years you get nothing. So, I mean, there was no consistency there. So, I have no problem putting it back in if that's what the board wants to do, so we know its budget is, so it doesn't come out of the inheritance up front. But still doesn't make any less of an issue for us, I guess.
And I know there's a sensitivity with inheritance tax, but remember part, I think it was back in 98 when they set limits on public entities, taxing limits and things like that. There was state aid that was in there that's been rolled back, and part of the inheritance tax, they wanted us to use that for property tax relief. And so I agree with Terry, we save that when we can, but we're also able to use that. And that, I know there's some counties that hoard it and hoard it and hoard it, and then they make donations to things that get the legislature and the governor a little upset. But outside of that, inheritance fund can be used for things. And I think we need to – I like the idea in some instances to pay it back. It does provide for some things outside of – it keeps local property taxes from doing a Peak and Valley, those things. And I know years ago, the county board, even before I was here 5 years ago, they made a decision to show operations in the budgets. And that's Don can probably speak to how thin the line was, because they were operating so heavily out of inheritance. And I think as a former supervisor, we speak to that too. So I think we're in a better place. But I think there's a need for some vehicles here. Gus is making his case. We've got a motion. We need a number to come up with, and I think we've got some high mileage vehicles that need to be taken out of the fleet, in my opinion. And we've got a motion in a second. We need a number out there to start with, and then part of the budgeting process will, it's going to continue to be an issue because we've got a high mileage fleet, which I believe is appropriate. I think vehicles are made better these days, and they run better and they run longer. And if you look at the number of high mileage vehicles we have, it attests to that. I mean, they've got breakdowns, but they're running. They're doing pretty good. So,
and realizing that there's a need for pickups to be part of the fleet, is there a need for 4 additional pickups to add to the fleet?
I guess that's more Gus's, but I will say that there, if you're looking at sport utility vehicles, and I believe we'd be replacing sport utilities with pickups, is
well, it'd be whatever rotations do right now. It might be a blend. It could be half and half.
But if you look at just the sport utility vehicles, you got 4 units that are 133,000 or more units that are, all sport utility vehicles. So, I don't know where your rotation's at, but looking at it that way, my mind, yeah.
Do these pickups all have, we're buying back seats so we can haul prisoners?
Crew cab.
Okay.
Full four-door, yeah. And they are, let's put it in Gary's terminology backwards, the cars were substantially higher than the pickup was from the same location. I haven't seen the information, which kind of struck me kind of odd. So.
And one of the questions that was brought up also, Gus, that I think it'd be a good time for you to go ahead and, when you look at the cars that we're buying, being the Dodge Charger, or I shouldn't say we're buying, but the ones we bought in the past year, and you look at them as far as fuel mileage goes to a pickup, isn't really a whole lot of difference there.
Probably wouldn't be, simply because of how we drive. We went to the, years ago we tried going from the Crown Vic, we started going to the Chargers because we've been hearing a little better on fuel consumption. But in reality, when you figure the way we drive it, and then a pickup, probably not going to be a lot different on it because just simply the way we drive. Normal driving to us might be 75 miles an hour going to an accident or a call for service, where for someone else it might be 50, 55. So it doesn't make a difference on your consumption. So they're probably not a big difference, no. I would say none.
Not on 77. They were all going 75 this morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't govern those pickups, can you?
Yeah. Yes.
All
Need a number. I'm hearing 2, 3, 4. If we're comfortable with 2, we need a motion for 2. If we want, then we'll come back in the budget year. If 4's too strong, I guess we, you know, got a motion in a second. We just need a number so we can let the bids. What are we comfortable with?
I'll throw the motion out there that we call for bid for 4 for the pickups.
So that would be amended the motion. Do I have a second for 4? But 4's too strong.
Apparently so.
That'll die. So
25.
So there's no second. So that motion for the number, we still got the motion and the second to let bids. We need a number.
I'll make a motion. We do 3.
Go for 3. Have a motion for 3.
Second.
By buyers. Any more discussion? So we have a motion to let bids for Sheriff's Cruisers for 3. I guess we'll vote on 3.
And Matt, this is a motion to let out bids. This doesn't mean that we're accepting all of those bids or whatever, because whatever the bids come back in, we still, as a board, will evaluate those and make the decision whether or not to accept the bids. It depends on where they come in at.
But it will make a difference. I mean, the quantity usually, maybe it doesn't in this case.
No, the quantity, the 3 is, yeah, that will make a, because that's what's going out. But it whether or not you accept any of them. I mean okay. Whether you accept 3 or none. I mean, it depends on how the bids come back in. No, the quantity is, yeah, we're putting out bids for 3, yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I will vote for letting the bids for 3, but and we'll see where they come in at, and see where the money comes out.
If they come in and it's too strong, we can deny all, and we can come back and shoot for 2. We'd stretch it out, but there's a somewhat time sensitive based on some of the informal bids that were taken. So just be aware of that. But okay, so yes, Gary.
I'll support the motion for 3 units here, but I'm just going to throw this out at you guys that we're probably going to end up right back here next year doing the same thing for 3 more units again. When you look at the mileage, we're going to end up doing the same darn thing again, and there's no guarantee that this price is going to be here. So just at that point.
Right, but I would rather see injecting fewer new cars in more regularly until we get on a regular rotation of, say, 5 years or 4 years or whatever it needs to be. But instead of bringing in more cars all at once, get on a regular rotation.
And I don't disagree with that a bit, Kathy, but the problem we're going to have is next year we're going to be in the same boat. We're going to do the same dang thing over again, and we're not going to get in a regular rotation. That's what I'm saying.
Further discussion. Okay, so we'll vote on the number of cards, and then we'll come back and we'll actually approve to let bids. So we're voting on 3. Vote 7-0 to approve for 3. Have a motion and a second to let bids for the Sheriff's Office, and now we know the number. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, vote 7-0 to approve letting bids.
Are you accepting comments?
Well, if you'd like to. Related to his cars.
I heard a lot of positive things, and then I heard some that weren't so efficient. Alan Grell, and I live in 1907 Washington. I served 12 years on the board here. 16 years ago, I came in. We were talking about this same problem. It's almost a joke, guys. Over the 16 years, every year we came up with basically the same ideas. Terry, in my mind, is absolutely right. This is not the type of purchase that should be supported out of inheritance. This is routine in nature. You cannot operate a sheriff's department without those mobile vehicles. They're the key pacing items. Then all you simply need to do, and you've talked about it again, and we talked about it, but nobody ever did anything. I just got so tired of talking about it, I quit worrying about it. Because ultimately, it's going to cost you a certain amount of money to do it whatever way you do it. But the point is, you got to do it. You got to repair them. You got to buy the gas. And they are important to the
effort of law enforcement in Gage County. I think it would be very, very important that you try to figure out whether you need to buy two every year or three, but you got to get your budget level so you don't have these spikes up and down. I've heard you twice today say, well, we'll borrow it from inheritance, we'll pay it back. Man, let me tell you, that's just like the federal government. We're going to buy it. It's going to get tougher and tougher to pay it back. Get a budget bill in the sheriff's department that supports what you believe the citizens out there want. And all of you at one time or other said a part of that. Myron said too, Matt, I can't remember what you said, but it was very positive. Like, yes, I understand that you can't say you're never going to buy it out of inheritance fund. But boy, let me tell you, borrowing it, taking it out of inheritance for stuff that is routine expenses to Gage County taxpayers is not good visibility to them. They got to know what it costs to run. And let me tell you, I don't think there's probably too many people out there will argue about paying law enforcement people a decent salary, putting them in a safe vehicle, and being absolutely sure you can get a response when you need one. And if you can't articulate and sell that, you're in trouble. Thank you.
All right. Any more discussion? All right. Next is approve or disapprove designation of county blacktop roads to be included in a proposed bond issue.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make a motion to approve these roads for the proposed road bond issue. And I'll read through these. It might bore you a little bit, but there's six segments to it. Segment number one would be Philly to East Pickrell Road, approximately 6.5 miles, 2.5 to 3 inch overlay. Segment two, approximately 4 miles, East Pickrell Road to East Cedar Road, 2.5 inch overlay. Segment three, East Cedar Road to Adams City Limits, 3 inch overlay. That's a total of 13.5 miles at a cost of, rounding it off, $1,746,000. The segment four of this project, South 66 Road, from Highway 136 to East Sergeant Road, 2 miles, 8-inch asphaltic concrete road, total cost of $1,069,000. Segment 5, East Plum Road from South 1st Street to Liberty, 4-inch overlay, 10.2 miles, $2,071,000. Segment 6, PWF Road from the county line to Southwest 61st Road, 2.5 inch overlay, 6 miles, $734,000. The total projection cost would be $5,621,000.
That's a motion by Chairman of Road and Bridge. I have a motion to approve designating those as the roads that we would put in a potential bond issue. I have a motion.
Support.
Second.
Second.
By Dorn. Now we'll have discussion. I'll start off that these were the roads that, and Galen, if I have you come up here because I know we'll reference you. These were the roads that were the highest traffic and worst shape that were designated, that we've talked about for some time. This is up for discussion. That's what's proposed. If there's a desire to, of these five, which is the recommendation coming out of Road and Bridge, to do something different, now is the time to modify, add input. So I have Galen up here, too, if there's questions for Galen. So we talked about this extensively on Monday, and that's what we came up with. So that's what I had to say, so Terry.
One other comment I'd like to make. If these roads are done, the recommendation from Mark Minnelli would be to pull the weight restrictions off of these roads. take them off, and you could be using
the state statute. Yeah.
Yeah, go along with state statute. 80,000 pounds. You would be using pulling those restrictions off because he said these roads would now be capable of hauling the weights that the trucks nowadays are hauling. I mean, nothing's getting smaller. I mean, everybody's got semis nowadays, so the loads are, you know, up to that level all the time. So it to me, it'd be a big plus to get these there, get the DOT off our backs, and have it the way it should be.
And the approval today would be designating these roads. We'll come back in 2 weeks. I've spoken with Don about giving us some information over the next 2 weeks of whether we do a mail-in ballot, or I guess what I call it now is ambulatory voting, where you actually show up someplace and vote. I don't know what the terminology is now. It used to be voting.
Poll
now.
Voting.
Poll voting.
Polls. Go to the polls.
Going to the polls. Okay. Okay, so non-ambulatory. But at any rate, so Don will give us that information so we can do it the most cost-effective way. And then also I've talked with Myron, and he's going to get in contact with some bonding companies so we're not just getting with the first company that shows up. We'll see how we can get the best rates to get the best value. And outside bidding the bonds, we'll get some informal quotes and see what it's a professional service. We'll see what they can do for us. So that'll be in 2 weeks. So really what we're doing here is we're designating the roads that we're proposing, and then in 2 weeks, if for some reason we don't want to do it, then we can just vote no and the bond issue goes away and it's for naught. But we just needed to designate the roads because of the studies that have been done out there and all the data that's been collected. And I can't regurgitate it, and I don't – Galen, you probably can regurgitate all that data, and Mark Minnelli can be there, but that's kind of where, and that'll be the process. So we'll come back in 2 weeks. But this will designate the roads. How do we feel about these five segments? Any questions for Terry, Lester Road and Bridge, Galen, Kathy?
Terry, the numbers you said didn't quite jive with what I've got on my last page here. What was your total?
Total cost?
Yeah.
$5,621,009.10, to be exact. I rounded it probably.
Well, I've got 55,820,42,60.
I didn't add them up. That's just
no. Yeah, that
I had.
There was one of these other figures that I was off.
Well, good. Cheaper then.
Yeah.
Good job, Kathy.
Hold on. Wait a second. Hold on a second.
I'm on the back page of this.
Right.
There's two.
Okay. Are there two back pages?
Well, I like the one she's saying because it's cheaper. Galen, can you confer? We've got one that one that may have been printed sooner than the other. We've got two different versions.
The total.
And these are estimates.
We got this in Road and Bridge.
This is the one we received Monday.
Monday from Road and Bridge.
Right.
Okay. This is the one that was here.
This is a copy of what Minnelli gave you guys at Road and Bridge. And then he sent down some additional ones, and then I switched them for everybody to have a bind.
Yeah.
Binded one.
And that came in
figures,
less.
Yeah, the figures are different on this one. I can see it because I have both.
Maybe he didn't put his bill in there. No, I don't know.
Maybe.
Where is the discrepancy at?
Well, the first one.
Segment one and
is
five.
Down,
yeah,
one, down two, at the bottom, your total cost for all segments.
And
then it's on segment six is a different.
Yeah.
Well, they're all different. Segment five is two.
No. Segment two is segment four
is right.
I think just approving segment put three. These projects in a deal. The dollar amount, if it's off, you can get a firm dollar amount for your next meeting if it is approved.
Yeah, these are estimates.
So you don't try
5.6
to figure out the math
estimate
today.
And I know that when I spoke with Gay and I was doing the radio show the other day, he calls in as we were talking about it, and in the initial quotes we had some time ago, Galen said, I just got a call from Mark Minnelli. They're about 10% higher. So
roughly, yes.
The longer we wait, the higher the price goes, and just the point to bring out. So these are estimates, and once we bid those and the specs and everything, and I think Mark Minnelli said when we get to the point of actually bidding things out, there'll be a discussion of concrete versus blacktop, and yes, he'll put concrete as a secondary, because he said in some cases concrete is coming in cheaper.
Now, and that was on the 2 mile segment that would be new.
Correct.
Church Road.
Correct. Yeah. Correct.
It would be possibly bid either way.
Asphalt. Clarifying that. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We're not going to chew up blacktop and lay down. It would just be in that new segment.
And so you, you know, then you have to decide if it's close enough what you want to do. But so this is, again, there's more process to come, but this will just designate those roads.
I think the segments out there are appropriate. No, no, no. We discussed the segments that were done the last time by the county. Was that in
99?
98, 99, something like that. The work was done in 99.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, Galen, do you have a list of the segments that were done at that time?
I do.
I don't have them with
okay.
me.
Okay. Was the Odell Blacktop, Ellis Road? Nope. I telling you?
The bond issue was voted on in October 3rd, 98. Construction began spring of 1999. It was Holmesville Blacktop, 19th Street extended, a little bit of blacktop there by the golf course, Hidden Acres, Odell Blacktop, north and south of Wymore Blue Springs, Ellis Blacktop, blacktop from Claytonia that comes and goes west to DeWitt area, blacktop adjacent to Christ Lutheran Church, and then looks like a little segment there. That be, this is kind of a bad map. Is that Adams up there?
It's on Apple Road.
It's Apple Road.
It's either
okay.
east
not
or west of Cortland. I'm not sure. It'd be that's where the blacktop is at. Yeah.
Mm. I missed a section. I think I named them all.
And those segments that were done at that time remain in relatively good shape, right?
Yes, they really do.
I mean, actually, they look pretty darn good.
Better than what I thought they'd be. Yep. For many years, they've been in service.
On that note, I guess my question, being as I wasn't in the discussion with Road and Bridge through this all, my question is that, okay, we're going to build these roads up, to where we don't have the weight restrictions, which, whether you got the weight restrictions or not, fellas, these trucks are traveling up and down them. So that's great for these roads, but for the ones that have done, and yeah, Galen's happy with the way they look now, but what is our plans for those other roads that we have just currently redone in 98? What are we going to be doing for those roads? Because the weight restrictions are still be on them. The trucks are still going to be traveling up and down them. They're still going to be broken down. What are we going to be looking at in the future for the rest of the roads that we got out there? Not only what's going to happen here, but what are we doing with all the rest of it?
Gary, my intention was, if this gets passed, and it would be the full board's intention to pull all the weight restrictions off, because there's just very few that are restricted right now. There's probably, I've got the list not with me, though, there's probably four or five roads, Adams, Philly Road being one, Odell Highway being another. I know two of the main ones that are restricted. The rest of them, there's no very little restriction on the rest of the, and maybe Galen, you could answer that a little better. How many roads are restricted out there? How many blacktops?
I mean, I would say probably at least the majority of them.
From are they all?
Not all of them, no.
No. But I mean, if we designate, you know, just a few getting pulled, I'm in favor of pulling the signs off all of them. That's my personal opinion.
And I agree with that, Terry. I guess what I'm getting back to, Galen, is how are we going to maintain those roads? You know, this is going to take care of these. But going forward in the next 5-10 years, what are we looking at the rest of these roads that we're not spending any money on in this $5.6 million? What are we going to do to make sure that we sustain those roads?
In answer to that, in Galen's plan, there is aggressive armor coating being done to these roads, which Mark Minnelli has stated in the past. That's one reason the county has been very aggressive in the past, armor coating roads, sealing them up. That's one reason they are in the shape they're in right now. So, and that will continue even a little more aggressively with the armor coating. I think that will save and maintain them longer. It's not going to make them last forever. I think the life expectancy was, what, 20 to 20 years? 15 to 20 years?
20 years on a cement road.
Okay.
Less than that on an asphalt road. Yeah, that's the engineers talking.
Right.
Now, all the roads have gone longer than that because we got 155 miles in the county. 15 years ago, they did 39 miles of overlay. We're proposing another 29 miles of overlay here and then two new roads. Basically, we, in 25 years in, if you plan on these going 10 years before you do something again, in 25 years, we haven't quite done half of the miles overlay. So, yeah, that's a huge cost out there always.
It's a continuous maintenance. I mean, there's nothing where you're not going to have to look at it again. It's going to be ongoing. That's just the nature of the beast.
Most expensive thing we do is our highway department, road and bridge. It's statutorily one of our obligations is to maintain the roads, and we try to do other things as well and take care of the needs of the other citizens too, but that's the most expensive thing we do. Yeah, it's only getting higher.
As far as the weight limits on the other roads, I think it definitely should be looked at pulling the weight limits, possibly with the exception of that spring thaw period, you know, when maybe it needs to be different. And, you know, like taking the Odell Blacktop, you know, for an instance, you know, I would hate to see all the grain get shipped out of the Odell elevator. I don't know if any of that gets sold to the ethanol plant, but I'd hate to see it all go up the Odell Blacktop in February, March, when it could go up Highway 77. You know, that would be my other point. I got no problem hauling that to Odell in the fall and that type of thing, or any of the other roads, but that spring thaw period is the tough time on the roads.
And don't think that I'm questioning your guys' judgment. The thing is, you know, I'm not in the discussion, so yep. Don't ask the question. Don't know if it's been considered. No. And just to your point, Myron, is that 98 was when that was done. That's already 15 years ago. See, that's what I mean, that's where I'm coming from. And what John was just referring to, I got a little bit of knowledge as to what goes on there. And then the grains that go out of Odell is going to go to the best market where the co-op can make the most money.
Right.
I think if you check, the majority of that's going on the state highway down to Hanover.
Okay. And so. But that could also change next year because the best market might be the ethanol plant or some other direction, you know.
Yeah. And I think that as... You know, I might be speaking outside of this chair right now, but the co-op does try and do their best to do the best for their areas that they're in also.
Right.
So.
Looking at two gentlemen back there, Mr. Fritzen and Mr. Weiss, and I know I spoke with you in our recess, and do you have comments regarding these segments of roads, both ag producers, and just like to hear from you all. Name and address for the record, Gary.
Gary Wee, 6532 East Sergeant Road, Beatrice, Nebraska. I live on the north end of South 66th, and I want to thank the board for including those two miles in the bond issue. About 6 years ago, the board got those 2 miles up to the specs for the paving. They spent a lot of money doing that. They utilities were all moved. They got easements, and if that went or doesn't get on this bond, you know, then that money's wasted. As far as I'm concerned, it's a pretty flat road now, so there are some washboards on it. But it was made that way so that we could get this paved here. And you know, if it doesn't get paved, well, then I just didn't see a little bit of a crown on it then because it is kind of rough. The road serves two churches out there. You've got a lot of activities out at these two churches. The ballpark is out there. The Freeman High School now has their girls softball team that plays out there. They bring in schools from Fairbury, Wymore, and they go up and down this road, the school buses and stuff to go out to that ballpark. Myself, you know, I've got a poultry operation out there, and when we load out, the trucks go up and down the road. If it's muddy, it's kind of tough on them because they all come in one night. There's about nine loads go out, and sometimes I'll wait at the end of the road and call ahead, you know, make sure that they aren't meeting another truck. So, but other than that, I want to just, and I have noticed that it seems to be somewhat of a shortcut for some people, because the other day there was a truck that had Landall disc on it, and he must have come from Marysville, but he was going through on that road, and there's like 4 or 5 discs were on it, you know, they were disassembled, but where he was going, I don't know, he had lights flashing and everything else.
How does he make that turn north, you know, where cuts back to the east there? I'd be curious how he made that.
Well, yeah. Well, he wasn't long or anything. Oh, okay. I just think he might have been a little wide or something. But
probably.
Yeah. And I have seen a lot of, I don't know, constructors' trucks and stuff going up and down that road. So I don't know if it must be a shortcut. Well, they're just bypassing Beatrice, probably. So that's all I have. I just want to thank the board for including those 2 miles.
Linhart.
Linhart Fritzen, 29813 South 120th Road. I'm glad I ain't got you guys' headache. That's all I can say. But I've got basically questions. Well, you're adding more roads and what have you, and this is quite a few years ago. We had a meeting in the Virginia Legion Hall. The Liberty Road to the south was blacktop, and they was planning on finishing it. And then we was promised they was going to finish it, and I suppose they run out of money like everything else goes. And so it has a lot of dust in the fall. In fact, I've stopped a truck when I'm hauling grain. When the wind is not blowing, you just cannot see or anything. So, I mean, you told me it's still in the 1 and 6 year plan. Is that correct?
It's on the 6 year. I asked Galen about that. We believe it's on the 6 year.
Okay, so it hasn't been kicked out then?
Not dead.
Okay. And have you done test on how many fertilizer trucks go west, north of town here by the hospital?
What was the number he gave us?
Hickory once? Road?
Yeah, what was the number? He gave us a number one time. Coke gave us a number.
Coke has given us an estimation that 2 months in the spring and 2 months in the fall, there's 200 trucks a day.
200 trucks a day.
Now, okay. That was one of the meetings we had at Coke. That was their estimation. I don't believe we have a number down that specifically for trucks. Now, they did a road count. I don't know when the last one was. I know 4 or 5 years ago you did a road count, and then there was 435 vehicles 4 or 5 years ago used Hickory Road.
Okay. Now, that's time frame, spring and fall is what it is. Now, out east of town here, what I'm wondering is when they all come in from the east, is there going to be a specific route they're going to have to take to get to the fertilizer plant, or how do they get to Beatrice here all? They are thick in the spring and the fall. There's probably, I've went down the road already, and there's as high as going 10 miles east, as high as 2 per mile. In stretches. And so I'm wondering, is it going to be a bypass or something to the fertilizer plant coming from east, or what is the plan here in Beatrice? What route do they take now?
There's a truck route that goes north there just by, you were on the city council. What's your truck route there?
Yeah, the truck route. You turn and head north, the block east of Valentino's.
Yeah.
Up to Ellis Street and then back to 77. So you got three lane one way, followed by a three lane one way, getting you back to Highway 77.
How about going west of town? Do they go north and then come on in on the fertilizer?
The truck route is that same Ellis Street. You turn off on Ellis Street, and you go 2 blocks down to the west, and then turn south to get back to the highway. And then coming in from the west, coming into town, you turn down there.
By the bridge.
Yeah. Yeah. Just yeah. East of the bridge. And then you go a block over to the south and then back up.
I was just wondering how that all.
If you go north, you've got 3 turns, and if you keep going west, you've got 4 turns.
Yeah. And then there's another thing I was thinking about. Terry brought up a real good deal. A number of years ago, you know, they put in the blacktop road, not much there. Then they forget to armor coat them. And then they all go to pot and then wonder why. Well, that should be on a maintenance basis, that armor coating. I mean, steady as far as I'm concerned. You know, you can see that. But on that highway going north to Philly, there was federal funds involved. Can you legally post that limit?
I've heard that question before. I don't know if that is a legal
Now, that is illegal.
I've heard that comment before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, well, I know a guy that checked into it, and he said there was federal funds involved. Mm-hmm. You cannot post them.
Mm-hmm.
That's an empty semi, practically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because currently right now it's 15-ton. The Philly Adams Blacktop is 15-ton.
Yeah, but you can't really legally enforce it, from what I gather.
Well, Roger's been enforcing, haven't he?
Have you?
Well, ask this guy.
Have you been enforcing it?
Washington's on sequestration. They've dropped their patrol of the Philly Adams.
Well, I mean, you know, that question has come to me all the time. And then the guy told me, he says, well, if I ever get to the point, he says, he was going to fight it. Well, I've got to go on the road, you know. How are you going to get to a place? I'm paying taxes.
Well, I think that's part of what Terry's looking at here. Is,
yeah.
Because if we tell the carrier enforcement operators to, that's the rule, they will enforce it. We will get tickets up there. Now, I'm not going to tell you every ticket gets charged full extent. I mean, I understand agriculture is number one in this county, and some of those tickets are awful high priced. So we're kind of between a rock and a hard place. So I'd like to see something like what Road Bridge is proposing.
Axle limit will always be there as far as that goes. But spring and the fall, you know, that could be posted when the thaw is. That's when it's hard on them blacktops. You know, that's only maybe, well, this year. Last year it never did freeze, did it? But anyhow, you know, maybe a two-month period is about all there is.
You were in Arizona all winter. How did you know?
How do I know? Well, I know there's a lot of things going on in Arizona that I wish that Gage County Sheriff would follow up on.
What else you got, Lynn?
But I'd like to see the county. A number of years ago was to the county. That was before the city sales tax come in. I says the county, look into it. Then they said they couldn't have a county sales tax. Then it come about they could have a county sales tax. So where does it sit? I mean, if a county sales tax was done, you could have that for maintenance every year. That'll bring in millions of dollars. Look at Beatrice here, how many millions they're getting a year. And have that for maintenance, something like that, I mean. So if you guys are look into it again and what the procedure would be.
We can look. I think there is an opportunity to do that. I think it's a small amount.
See what it would all, even a small amount. You get a faucet to drip long enough and it'll accumulate.
And then, you know, then there's always the
well, that's about all I got. I had to come and see you guys. You got new faces here.
Well, thanks for coming, Lynn Hart.
Some old faces. I mean, they've been around for a long time.
Thank you, Lynn Hart.
Thanks a lot. And so I just wanted to check that out.
Okay. Anybody else, Alan? You get something else?
Just last. Then I have a couple comments. But
what?
Nebraska state law indicates that it's a local sales tax. And city, county government is local in their concept. City of Beatrice identified the benefits of a city sales tax, and it's done pretty darn good things for the city. It's maintained their roads to a degree. It's getting more difficult to do it because of increased costs. But that was a tremendous plus. And then the other side of it was we used it to reduce property tax. And oddly enough, about 72% of the citizens of Beatrice voted for that. But I think in Gage County, I think Wymore has a sales tax now, and Beatrice has a sales tax. So if the county were to put one in, the only jurisdictions you could collect it from might be, as an example, Philly, Nebraska, because they don't have one. You know, do they generate enough revenue to do that? You cannot impose a sales tax in the county, because when I was here on the county board, I thought, gee, we ought to impose, because you need money. It ain't simple. You just don't have enough revenue to do what you're responsible for doing, and
I don't think we're trying the right courses of action to get there. But
Alan, I want to be respectful, but we're still in the comment section regarding these five roads for proposal.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And so we have a motion in a second.
I'm
so
sorry.
if you want to make a discussion,
I'll come back. Yeah.
Okay, discussion regarding those. But we're in the discussion phase on that. So we've got a motion in a second. We've heard from a couple folks that live out there. We've heard from Galen. Anybody else have any comments or questions? Yes.
Well, I'd like to comment on what Lennart said about the Virginia Road. It's a three-mile stretch of gravel that goes down to a good blacktop. It is one of those incomplete projects. And certainly we would have liked to included it. It just didn't seem like it was feasible dollar-wise to do it at this time. But certainly it's something that I'm very aware of and would like to see done. You know, in addition to the traffic, it does carry, you know, a number of the students from the Liberty area attend school in Lewiston. So that is the road that the school traffic travels up to Lewiston for those kids. And it is something we certainly would like to have done it.
It's my role. And I believe a couple other just quick things. I believe the earliest Don said that we could hold this election if we had this election would be June 11th.
It would be the soonest if I got noticed.
Earliest.
Right
if
away.
We approve this, if we approve to go ahead and do a bond issue on this at our next meeting, the earliest we could have a vote would be June 11th. Don did have an individual from one of the bonding agents contact her, and this is just a preliminary number on for a $5.695 million bond, but a 10-year, the interest rate would be 1.86 and would amount to about $30 on a $100,000 valuation. Here again, those are preliminary numbers, and we have three different companies, bonding agents, that have expressed interest in making proposals or giving us proposals. So we are looking at that and getting that work in progress.
Well, competition is a good thing. They can do what they want, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, all right, any further comments? So we're just approving these five. Recommendation from Road and Bridge. Chairman of Road and Bridge stated them. Any further discussion? Last call. Vote. 7-0 to approve. Next item again, I guess Myron touched on discussion on the date for road bond special election and bonding company. Date and bonding company will be selected on April 17th. Don, do you have anything to add regarding the polling site or mail-in?
Well,
election.
From the information, and I can give you some figures I'll pass out here that was presented by the Secretary of State's office. And it's just basic information comparing polling sites to your mail-in election. You can see that on the handout that there have been several mail-in elections on the highlighted copy. Mail-in elections handled through the mail anyhow, that the pass, the fail. And when it's all said and done, basically I think they're all about the same. There's some quotes out of the Lincoln Journal that are on the second page that have some figures that they have come up with. But when it all comes to the total here, the average, as Secretary Gale says, average is about the same for success, but you have a much greater consensus if you go by mail. It is a higher percentage. You can see that there's a higher percentage on a lot of the mail elections. When I've tried to put some preliminary figures together, I'm still looking at exploring some options on some envelopes. But probably the cost, now that I've consolidated precincts, is going to be maybe somewhere around $2,000 difference, up to a couple thousand, between $1,000 and $2,000 could be difference. So, you know, not a significant amount. Your election's going to cost you over $20,000 regardless.
And if you did it with voting at the precincts, they'd still have the option to request a ballot by mail. Mm-hmm. Okay. So they would have that option either way.
What did you say the estimated cost would be?
It'll be over $20,000 for an election, special election.
And that's just the cycle that we're in now, because the next election that we would have would be a general election, would be
primary, would be May.
Would be May, so we'd have to wait a whole other year. So costs would continue to go up. If that's a decision in 2 weeks to not spend the $20,000, that is an option if we don't want to do this. But our current infrastructure continues to go. We just need to be very forthright about that.
And if you wait till next May to pass the bond issue or to vote on the bond issue, it's basically too late to bid for the contracts and have the contractor do it that year. Probably, I would guess.
Okay.
Yeah, and then your requirements for your election, like Myron said, June 11th would be your first available date because I have a 50-day notice requirement. That's the minimum, is 50 days. And then the election has to be held on the first Tuesday following the second Monday of the month of the election. So there's some statute requirements. So
if you didn't do it June 11th, you had to wait till in July then. You have to wait
Correct.
Another month to follow those statutes.
Okay. That's final discussion. And final comments, Alan, but we're going to go talk about FOP here pretty quick.
Yeah,
so
no,
if you've got any.
I would make a comment because I've made it several times, but I'll emphasize it again. You need money. And period of time I was here, I was disappointed in how we managed the money because I'm like John. Yes, at one time we did promise to do that Virginia Road. In my words, John, it makes this plan ineffective. The six-year plan, it didn't follow through, it didn't get there, and I see a lot of inefficiencies in this. I'd be more than glad to spend any time talking to people about how you can make more money here. First one I want to tell you is right now you are giving townships 7.5 cents. What does 7.5 cents raise in Gage County?
I don't, it'll be valuation $200,000 for every cent that's levied.
Correct. 1.5, 100, yeah, $1.5 million. This year, the townships only asked for $850. Where'd that other $700,000 go? It wasn't used effectively, as I see it. You know, I don't want to see my property tax go up anymore. But as a citizen of Gage County, and like somebody said, Roger did, this is an agriculture county. Maintaining those roads out there so that they at least meet average standards so that farmers can generate. Because, you know, farmers are going to take a really big lump this year. I think you're indicating, or Patty, that it's going to go up about 20%. Well, it'll go up that much again next year because the sales file. So they're only going to get more and more angry about the fact that they're carrying a tremendous burden for roads that, in my mind, you guys aren't maintaining adequately. My suggestion would be for $850,000, you look again and see if you can't convince the townships to take 4 cents. 4 cents raises $832,000, again, $850. There probably isn't one of us smart enough here to know where the decimal point goes to generate that other $18,000. And they still then maintain their authority. If they want to do something better, they have always had the right to go over it. I visited with the state treasurer's office the other day with Deanna Hefner. Deanna, you know, we give 7.5 cents away. There's about 18 of the townships that are down around 3.9, and they're going to go lower because their valuation is going to go up by about a third. You got an opportunity here to generate a tremendous amount of money. I'd be frightened to death to be talking to taxpayers today about a bond issue. I don't think there's much confidence out there. I think when it gets right down to it, farmers are going to go, oh, my God, I don't want my taxes to go up. And I know the bond issue because I was here when we voted on it and passed by 300 votes. You know how many votes it'll take to defeat it? 152. Because it'll swing. I'm of the opinion that you ought to talk to townships. I'm not here to hurt townships. I'm here to try to get us to do a much better job
on maintaining roads, getting the right amount of resources in there so we can keep this county moving forward. I hate to say it, but I'm not so sure we're not moving backwards. Gary's absolutely right. You're going to do $5.6 million worth. When are you going to do the next one? 10 years? That's just totally inefficient. Roads wear out faster than that. You got to figure out, and I know there's going to be a limit on the money, but when you can determine what that amount of money is and tell Mark Minnelli, he'll get you a plan that will get us headed down the road to make continuous improvement on the road system in Gage County. I don't find that to be unreasonable. I don't think most taxpayers will. Matt asked if I'd come out tomorrow and talk to townships. I'll come talk because we got to figure this out. If they want to keep it, I'd be more than glad not to. I'll give them 10 cents out of your budget because it would save me 2.5 cents. If I take back on my property 3.5 cents, you know what it's going to cost me? About $4 a month. And let me tell you who has the responsibility for the roads out there. Every citizen in Gage County should share and share as equal and fairly as they can to come up with enough money to solve some of these problems. They're only going to get worse. They're only going to get more expensive. And I think this is a course of action you ought to consider. I don't see you giving any consideration to anything other than what you have chose is the best for Gage County taxpayers. Matt's absolutely right. If it goes down in defeat, I'm not so sure that's a don't do anything anymore. You need to demonstrate that you can do more with what you got. And I think I outlined a financial alternative there that if you look at it and look at it closely, you'll find out you can make a difference. Thank you.
Any further comments before we go done for the day? Everybody feel like they were heard, had their opportunity to say what they needed to? Need a motion to go into closed session to discuss the negotiations with the Fraternal Order of Police for the sheriff, but it's their FOP, but it's the sheriff's deputies. Are you policemen or sheriffs? How does that go?
Sheriff.
Deputy, sheriff, deputy. Sorry. Oh, here we go. Okay. The brown collars.
Yeah.
All right.
So moved.
Moved by Lytle.
12:13.
Second.
Second by Setzer to go into closed session at 12:13.
There
you go. No, I don't think so. And no action afterwards. Just discussion. Oh, vote? 7-0.
Pass for lunch.
Move. Good. Need a motion to come out of executive session 12:38.
Move we come out of executive session.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Juergens. Any discussion? Seeing none, vote. 7-0. Anything else for the good of the order?
Let's see who worked for years is showing up.
Gage County Board of Supervisors adjourned 12:38.
See you all.
Thank you, Terry. I thought we were going to have to stay for longer.
I was going to call the